welcome to the film podcast. Yeah, we got rid of the list.
Formerly the list.
Formerly
known as.
Well, I just wanted to be able to talk about, you know, just maybe just delve it into one film once in a while. So
That's cool.
I'm going to go away with the list.
Well, I'm just trying to wear Ricardo down to eventually where we don't have a title and we're just a symbol.
Is it going to be just the podcast?
The podcast previously known as
Well, yeah, then you have to have some sort of odd sound that goes with the symbol.
Like,
yeah, that's it. Whatever. maybe you want to work on that. Yeah. But regardless, I think that's a good idea.
Some sort of squeal from a Prince album that he makes,
yeah,
I think would be the sound of the podcast new name.
Yeah. So for the new listeners, we are a weekly podcast. We try to be a weekly podcast where we discuss everything film stuff. We like to list things. That's our forte. So yeah, it's usually four of us, myself, Adam Scott, Jenny, and Kevin. But today we're changing up a little bit. We got two guests, one in studio and one over Skype. I'm excited. We got a Skype guest. This is our first Skype guest.
It's gonna be interesting.
Yeah. And, that is Eric Peterson. Eric, do you have a blog?
Well, I used to have a blog. Well, I do have a blog that I used to update called The Restless Kind, .blogspot.com. But I kind of fell off writing there. Spend most of my online time on the Facebook, and then I do contribute to two podcasts, the Love That Album podcast, which I think you're aware of.
Oh, yeah.
And another podcast called Outside the Cinema, and I contribute music segments to both of those shows.
Yeah, which we're probably going to have you on that podcast pretty soon, on the list,
okay.
Music podcast. And then we have our in-studio guest is he's been on here more than once. He's a regular.
I think he's our second most featured guest.
Yeah, yeah.
After the other Brian?
After Brandon.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, Brandon's
Bennett.
Very good.
And he is Brian Sauer from Rupert Pumpkin Speaks.
That's right, my blog.
And, yeah.
Thank you for doing this podcast and somewhat, I guess, inspired by my series.
Well,
I think
entirely inspired
by my series. Okay. Sorry.
So, yeah. So, today we're talking about VHS Gems. And head over to what's the full title of your website?
The website is rupertpumpkinspeaks.blogspot.com. And, yeah, if you just look up Rupert Pumpkin Speaks VHS Gems, there's a whole bunch of posts there from various other bloggers and critics and things, including myself too. So, but yeah, it was a fun series, and it was neat to. It's becoming harder and harder to do a list like this because so much stuff keeps coming out via, you know, MOD or you know whatever.
Yeah, I think only one of my movies is actually no longer or is like an official VHS gem. I think everything is now. One of the from the remaster collection, like, oh yeah, we'll make it the DVD for you if you order it. But
yeah,
we don't just have stockpiles of them.
Yeah, well, one of mine is that MOD. So,
a couple of mine are non US region DVDs, and then some of them are on instant. But other than that,
yeah,
I see this list as a things that the MOD companies might want to get on.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty friendly with the Warner Archive guys, so I like to, you know, sort of poke and prod them with lists like this.
Very cool.
Yes, and I have noticed occasionally that they've, and not that there's any necessary connection, but they have put out a few things that have showed up on my blog before they were on DVD, which is kind of cool. So, could happen.
Very cool. All right. Well, why don't we talk about movies we've seen in theaters? We'll start off by doing that. We'll start off with Eric. Eric, anything you've seen in theaters?
In theaters. Well, just before Thanksgiving and right after, I did see Argo and Skyfall. And I know I'm behind everybody else in seeing those. But that was the two big ones that I wanted to get in. So
Argo, I still haven't seen. What are your thoughts about that?
I really enjoyed it. I do see some of the things that people are complaining about. As far as some of the thriller pacing issues, but I have a certain amount of affection for films of that nature and set in that time because, you know, I was a young person then. I was under 10 years old, but I kind of remember all those things going on. But the big thing that I haven't heard people talk about that I liked about it was a lot of actors and actresses who I saw in their younger days, are in this film as adults and are very good. Like Rory, what's his name? Rory Cochrane from
Oh, yeah, from Empire Records.
Yeah.
Dazed and Confused.
I did not recognize him at all. And when I looked at the cast listing when I got home, I was like, wow.
Oh, that's right. And they actually
were. Girl who was in the Faculty that.
Clea DuVall.
In the film, and I can't remember her name.
Clea DuVall, yeah.
Really good as well.
Yeah, Clea DuVall, she had a run there in the 90s where she was obligatory.
Yeah, yeah.
She just kind of.
She was kind of like.
The teen movie.
She was like.
Faculty. She's all that.
She was also kind of like the indie, kind of like Parker Posey type as well.
Yeah,
but you know, it's always interesting to see actors and actresses grow up and move on to other roles. You know, get out of that high school setting or whatever. And so I really liked Argo quite a bit, and I like Ben Affleck's the films he's made, so I'm pretty much on board with at least seeing just about anything that he directs at this point.
Yeah, me too.
Me too, and I think. His acting has changed. I am willing to watch anything he does act in. I'll give it a chance at least. Well, the stuff he directs himself in is really good. I enjoy.
This isn't a VHS gem, but there's a film he made in the 90s called Glory Days.
I remember that. Glory Days.
Oh yeah.
Sam Rockwell.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a kind of a sentimental favorite of mine. It's not a great film, but it kind of Ben Affleck had this weird thing where he made Glory Days, which kind of is the same story as Noah Baumbach's Kicking and Screaming. It's about people just graduating from college.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always saw it as like a second-class version of Kicking and Screaming, which is amazing. Yeah,
but then he made Chasing Amy, which is largely the same story as Noah Baumbach's Mr. Jealousy. So it's like this weird parallel kind of material going on.
Interesting. Yeah, I never thought about that. I also prefer Mr. Jealousy to Chasing Amy, but that I'm a big Baumbach guy myself.
Oh, me too. I love Baumbach stuff. But yeah, I have this kind of weird thing with Ben Affleck, which I don't really care about seeing some of those Geely or any of that kind of stuff. But I do like some of the early stuff he's done.
Phantoms?
As of late.
Hasn't that come up before?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's decided, it seems like, that he doesn't have to play the Hollywood game and he can do what he wants largely, which I kind of respect.
I do too. I dig that about him. I haven't seen Argo. I need to see that, catch up on that.
It's one of the half dozen movies that Scoot McNairy is in this year.
Scoot.
and
half
I need
half dozen, yeah, he's in a bunch.
He's in Argo, he's in Promised Land, he's in Killing Them Softly, I feel like every other movie Scoot McNairy is in it. And I like him, so
no, I do
it's
too.
Not
I
a
don't
problem.
I'm totally with you. He's cool. He's a cool guy.
Yeah. So moving on to Brian.
I've been watching a lot of movies at home. The last movie I saw in the theater was Silver Linings Playbook. So I know that's been out a little while. Although I guess it's still kind of limited as far as the country's concerned.
Really?
That's what I heard anyway on Twitter somewhere or something. I don't know.
For some reason I thought it was playing here, so it would probably be in wide release.
It could be now. I was just seeing something. I think it was Drew McWeeny was arguing with somebody else. I think it was one of the other critics for... Cinema Blend, and they were talking about what stuff they put on their top 10 list, and he was saying that even though Silver Linings wasn't nationwide, and this was I didn't even look, but I think it's out there now. But I really like that film quite a bit. I don't know if you guys saw it and what you thought.
I think we talked about it. I loved it.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite of the year.
Me too.
I loved it as well. It's definitely on my top 10.
You were a big
top five.
Fighter fan, right?
I love the Fighter.
Yeah, that was like my number two that year.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about David O. Russell and the direction. I mean, I went and rewatched I Heart Huckabees the next day, and I still really like that movie.
I do too.
But yeah, it's an interesting direction he's going.
I just watched the Hollywood Reporter director's
roundtable. The Q&A. Yeah, that was
It was
cool.
really good. You could definitely tell that after that whole Lily Tomlin that YouTube thing where he blew up on her and Dustin Hoffman. Definitely, he's aware of that, and he kind of – I feel like he did make a change. And he talked about how he got divorced around that time. And
yeah,
so,
it sounds like a really tumultuous
– you could tell that like, well, I don't want to be that asshole anymore. So. It's interesting. And what else did you see? Anything else?
Not really. I haven't been hitting the theater as much as I'd like. So I saw Skyfall and liked it. But
I loved it too.
Yeah.
Which I also liked Skyfall quite a bit.
Yeah, you had said you saw that as well, Eric.
I think it might make my top 10 of the year. Ooh, I really loved it. Yeah. And Adam?
About Skyfall or other movies I saw?
Just movies you saw.
I watched Skyfall again.
Ooh.
So that works also. I don't even remember when the last day. This whole week has been a blur. Again, because of screener season. So just So many movies.
So, okay, well, start naming them off, and I'll tell you. You saw Promised Land, right?
I did. I saw Promised Land.
Who directed that again?
Gus Van Sant.
Gus Van Sant,
oh,
yeah.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. So what did you think of that?
It was all right.
Yeah?
It's no Good Will Hunting. Savannah, my girlfriend, kept comparing it. She's like, oh, so did Matt Damon see Company Man, and this is his response to that? Which I guess, I mean, that fits. They are very similar movies, just kind of from a different angle, looking at the faulty economy.
But it's a solid movie we should watch, run out to watch.
I don't know that you should run out to watch it. I mean,
I almost never run out to watch Gus Van Sant movies.
Like yeah. That.
He just hasn't really blown me away in a little while.
Yeah. That's
I mean,
true.
This it's yeah. no well, Paranoid.
Milk, I really enjoyed Milk.
I liked Milk, but it's what Paranoid Park. That was one of his. I mean, it's not it's right. not Paranoid Park. Yeah. It's closer to Good Will Hunting, but it's not Good Will Hunting.
All right.
It was funny. Actually, my son was shown a movie in class the other day, and he was trying to, and my wife was trying to describe it to me, and she couldn't get it. And then my son was explaining it to me. He was like, this guy, you know, he finds this old teacher, and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, it's the guy. And he did a Sean Connery imitation. And I was like, oh, Finding Forrester. Okay. Because I haven't seen Finding Forrester. So
you're the man now, dog.
And I said that. I'm like, did he say that? And he's like, yes. I'm like, okay, there we go.
That's funny that he did the impression.
Film, but I kind of enjoy it.
I honestly haven't seen it. Its reputation precedes it as far as the silliness of that line. But,
yeah.
But that's all I really know.
That's a website now, isn't it? You're the Man Now, Dog, where they just have mashups of things. It's like pop culture mashups. And like, I remember like one of them was just a picture of Sean Connery, and it was a GIF, and it just repeated that phrase over and over and over again. Like it wouldn't stop until you left the page.
Wow. Wow. Just you should open that up in like your coworkers.
Yeah, just computer. Open it up and then leave.
Yeah,
totally doing that tomorrow. That's
awesome. And then what else did you see?
Okay, I've got my wonderful Letterboxd diary.
You know what? I'm back on Letterboxd. I had forgotten about that. I had the account that you sent me a link to, Brian.
Yeah, I love it.
And now I'm back on it, and I love it. And I love it. So.
Do I follow you there?
I don't know. Well, you introduced me to it, so I'm guessing you might follow me. Because you were.
I haven't played with it, so I don't even know what the appeal is. I tried Get Glue. I tried.
It's better.
Miso.
It's better.
Finally, I just went with the IMDb watch list.
It's better. It's just a really nice sort of layout. Like the posters are there. You can make. I love the list making ability. The diary is great. So you can just keep. I've been going since January 1.
Okay.
So I've got my whole year in there, and it's just so neat to just go back and flip through.
And you could see what month you saw what.
Yeah, I can see where I saw what. I can put star ratings. I can make a review if I want. I can see what you guys are watching. Yeah. It's like Miso and Get Glue, but it's just better. It's kind of like a Facebook-y sort of.
Yeah.
It's just yet another thing to waste your time. But,
yeah.
But it's fun.
But what's cool about it is you could add things to your instant queue right off of it.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I just love the diary thing because especially doing this each week and forgetting what I've seen so I can just look back and like, oh, this is what I saw. This is what I rated at the, like, this was my, it's bad because my gut reaction, I was like, oh, I just watched a movie. I got to go on Letterboxd and rate it. So I remember what my gut reaction was to the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we
see what Adam's watched.
Yeah. So what else did you see again?
Okay. So I saw This Is 40.
I did too with you. I saw it yesterday,
which I really liked.
Cool. I wasn't as hot on that, but then I heard an interview with Apatow on Fresh Air, and he gives really good interviews, and
he does
some really cool stuff to say.
I was really impressed because I had really low expectations because I wasn't a fan of Funny People.
That was okay, but definitely a step down.
Yeah, and so watching this, it's a little too long for my taste, but
it's a Judd Apatow movie, so you just kind of assume that going
in. It's really fun and
it's
funny.
True, that's
yeah, well, it's funny because like I'm used to like Woody Allen comedies where they clock in at like 1:25, 1:30, and then you're done. So it's like going from that to like, oh, we're gonna sit here for 2:10.
So it was 2:15.
Yeah,
and it's funny that you mentioned Woody Allen because I felt like this was Judd Apatow making his most Woody Allen movie.
Yes,
it reminds me a lot of kind of Hannah and Her Sisters a little bit.
Yeah, yeah,
maybe a little bit of Husbands and Wives.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, yeah,
there's a lot more emotion. Yeah. I mean, it's not they're very far apart. They're like distant, like fifth cousins twice removed.
No, that's cool. But I mean, so top 10-ish good, or you guys just thought
not for me?
No, okay.
But good enough.
It could be close. It's probably an honorable mention. We'll see how the rest
of
the
year
looks.
That's about where. Yeah. I mean, that if it came to that for me, I would be surprised. I mean, that would be good.
Yeah,
it'd be right where I'd like it to be.
It'd definitely be in my honorable mentions. So
yeah, the length even though you know it's going to be longer than it needs to be, the length is definitely an issue. Because as funny as scenes are, you're just like, you got to cut out. There's an economy of storytelling that you can kind of aim for. I know you like this joke, but you could have cut it out and the story wouldn't be affected at all.
Yeah.
Well, especially in this day and age of home video release where it's, oh, you can just put all this stuff back in later.
Seriously.
Absolutely. His movies are ideal for that sort of thing. And there's going to be a longer cut on video anyway. So,
The unrated version.
Yeah.
Wow.
Where you get to see Paul Rudd's asshole.
Cannot wait. Yeah. I hope they put it on the cover.
Yeah. And I saw – anything else you saw that hasn't come out?
That hasn't come out?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, see, there's movies that haven't come out that I'm allowed to talk about, and there's movies that haven't come out that I'm not technically supposed to talk about.
Wait, is all this stuff listed here? Or
it is. It's all – yeah, I log everything.
Jack Reacher you could talk about.
I didn't get into Jack Reacher.
Oh, you didn't get into
Jack Reacher. I didn't get in.
Okay.
I was bummed.
Well, let's stop there. I'll mention what I saw, the only thing I saw this week. Yeah, which is I watched Django Unchained.
Ooh.
Yes. I'm a huge fan of Westerns. One of my top five is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, you know?
Yeah.
And I loved it, but I felt like he was trying to make an epic, you know? And so I felt like it was a little too long. It was a little longer than it was supposed to be. But then maybe, because Richard Kelly tweeted that he saw a 4 hour and 20 minute version. And the version I saw was 245, 250. So there's maybe stuff, a whole storyline that I'm missing that was cut out to, you know.
Would that help?
Is this going to be like a Heaven's Gate kind of deal where the shorter cut that the studio puts out is kind of panned, but the longer cut is embraced?
I think maybe.
Well, they put out.
I think it'll still be loved.
I think this is the version that's coming out, though.
Sounds about right.
I just saw early press screening.
See, I'm allowed to talk about this because I didn't actually go to the screening. I just heard other critics talking about the screening.
Yeah,
and they were
like this sort of hearsay rules.
It's because I didn't sign any confidentiality agreement because I haven't seen it yet. But based on what I heard other critics say, who I won't name,
I didn't sign anything either. So
yeah. I've heard that it's really good and like really funny and that they don't mind the length. So
yeah,
I've heard it compared, like the people behind me at the screening that I went to that I'm probably not supposed to talk about itself were talking about how they liked it better than Inglourious Bastards.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I was going to say, how does it
know that?
Has anybody seen the original Django or any of the other Django films?
I have. Yeah.
I've seen the original Django, but it's been a long time. I could barely remember.
Me too. Me too. But you know what? The thing I have to say about this is that it was amazingly entertaining. It was fun. But and DiCaprio again. Like, you know, if you're just getting on the bandwagon, you know, welcome, because I've been on DiCaprio's jock for a very long time. So get in line, assholes. But yeah, so it was fun. Definitely go out and see in theaters. It's pretty big. But yeah, there was something maybe I'm missing. Maybe I'm missing that whole hour that was cut off.
You need it back.
I need it back. Yeah.
Well, I will say I'm planning to go see it. That's probably the next thing I'm going to see, unless the new Roman Coppola film hits theaters first.
When is that supposed to come out? By the way, do you know?
Which one is that?
The glimpse inside
the life of Charles Swain III. Is that what it is?
Yeah, a glimpse inside the life of Charles.
What's the story on this one? I've heard the title, but I don't know anything about it. I mean, I liked Roman Coppola's first movie.
Yeah,
it looks just like a silly, weird. It's just really bizarre. It's like Charlie Sheen playing this guy, and it's like his perception on his relationship with women, but told in really bizarre ways where, like, part of it is in a Western, but not like a Western, like a Django Western, but a Western where it looks like the villain with Arnold Schwarzenegger, where, like, they're wearing, like, it's like a Gene Autry Western.
Wow.
And it's just, like, this weird mesh of styles. I don't know. It looks fun.
Yeah. Just from the trailer, it's got a very Wes Anderson kind of a feel to it. Yeah,
definitely.
It's
definitely
like a campier Wes Anderson.
Well, and he worked with him on what?
Kingdom and Darjeeling Limited.
I didn't know he worked on him with Moonrise. I knew Darjeeling. That's cool.
Yeah, he co-wrote both, I believe.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I remember now watching Moonrise and seeing the scene, not to spoil too much, on the beach with the two of them.
Yes. Yeah.
That gets a little more graphic
in
some respects. And I was like, that's a Roman Coppola line. Yeah. But I, you know, that was just my stupid, you know, gut feeling because it felt like something he might do. It's a cool scene. It doesn't take me out. But for a minute, I was like, I thought about his collaborators and who was involved.
It's funny. That's what I thought, too. The thought that came to my mind was that's not Wes Anderson. That little moment isn't Wes Anderson.
You know, I rewatched that film last night with my brother. We had seen it in the theater because I got the Blu-ray, and it's probably my number one of the year so far.
Me too. I'm right there with you.
I sat there half the movie saying, first of all, there's a scene that I like to refer to as Wes Anderson's Hunger Games. And then for the rest of the movie, I was saying, I want to see Wes Anderson make a war film. I really want to see him make a war film.
That'd be interesting. Yeah. I get behind that, yeah.
Especially based on the stage adaptation in Rushmore.
Most definitely.
There you go. Pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'd love to see that. He's probably my favorite working filmmaker. I don't know. It's a toss-up between a lot of people, but Moonrise is my number one for the year for sure.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you guys want to throw out?
I also saw Hyde Park on Hudson.
Okay.
Which I think Dana Stevens' one sentence blurb introduction to her article explains it perfectly well. She writes for Slate, and it's, the hand job really arrives out of the blue.
And I just heard about this morning on the Linoleum Knife podcast, and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, I never would have thought.
It really blindsides you. You're like, wait, what? And I was watching a screener, so I could pause it and go back. And I was like, wait, no, that did just happen. I did not imagine that.
Wow.
It's a really weird movie. Okay, so based on the trailer, like, the trailer looks like a fun, like, sort of foppish kind of Gosford Park comedy of errors thing.
Looks like an old people movie.
It looks like an old people movie.
Like, you know, old.
It looks but like on Golden Pond.
But then you watch the movie, and like, there's really sinister music cues, and it's like this whole like conspiracy / espionage vibe to
what
it, and it's just based on like FDR's Many Mistresses. It's a really bizarre movie.
That's so
and
strange.
I don't understand 99% of the quotes I see flying around about it. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, so, the quotes on the posters, I'm like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
In general, is it getting decent reviews?
I mean, if you go by the poster, it's getting decent reviews. I think it's in the middle of the road, because Bill Murray is really great, but it's just weird, and it's tonally it's really awkward to me.
Yeah, that sounds.
And like, Laura Linney's character is really, she's like narrating it, but she's narrating it from the point of view of scenes where she's not even in. And it's a really bizarre movie. And then it's the same king from The King's Speech. So I'm just thinking I want to be watching The King's Speech instead.
I still haven't seen that, but it's on Instant now, and I'll have to finally check it out.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our stream of the week, Netflix stream of the week. We don't have a Shia LaBeouf intro because we got so many things plugged into the board right now. But all right. I'm just going to go off of the first movie on InstaWatcher website. And that is, unless you have something, Brian.
I can add one.
Or Eric.
I can add one.
Actually, I don't do Netflix instant stream. I get the discs.
Ooh.
Yeah. I haven't had internet at home for a long time. And it's only been this summer that I've had internet at home. And I just haven't switched over.
Nice. Well, for the people that do have instant, I'm just going to go with the first one that's on here. And it's The Adventures of Tintin on streaming. So I didn't mind that movie.
It was fun.
It was better than it felt like the Indiana Jones
that we should have gotten.
That we should have gotten. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it too.
And like Skyfall.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Brian?
I had one that sort of ties into the list here. I almost put it on my list. It's actually a movie I really like. It's called Chilly Scenes of Winter. It's got John Hurd, Peter Riegert, Gloria Graham, and Mary Beth Hurt, and it's kind of like John Hurd in one of his great he's just a totally underrated guy. I don't know if I've talked about him here before, but I love him in Cutter's Way, and this is another one that he's just great in. He's the lead, and he's sort of obsessed with Mary Beth Hurt, and it's this very dark sort of obsession love story that's kind of comedic, but I don't know. It's really good. It's based on a novel that I really like by the same name, and it's only been on VHS. It's not yet even on MOD, to my knowledge.
Oh wow!
But definitely worth a look on streaming. Chilly Scenes of Winter, highly recommended.
Can I throw one out that may or may not be on streaming, but I know is on? You can get from the disc from Netflix.
Throw it out.
There's a film called High Life from the '90s. Stars Eric Stoltz and Daryl Hannah and Campbell Scott.
That's Noah Baumbach, right? No. I'm thinking of High Ball. My bad.
No, that's Noah Baumbach. No, this is a Roger Hedden.
Oh, yeah.
I think did two other films. He did Bodies Rest in Motion and Sleep With Me.
Nice, yes.
And it's set at Christmas time in New York City, and Campbell Scott is a bartender who sister is Moira Kelly, and she says that she needs money for an abortion. So he has to go call in all the debts that he has. And kind of Frank Capra-esque hilarity ensues. It's called High Life. It's from the 90s. Just look for Daryl Hannah and Eric Stoltz, and you'll find it.
Yeah, that's a good movie. I think I actually have a DVD of that somewhere. I'm a fan of that one. I definitely like that movie. And nobody talks about it. It's totally forgotten.
Oh, yeah. It's one I always pimp at this time of year to people.
I haven't seen it, so that's definitely on my watch list on Letterboxd. All right, so why don't we start with Eric, and then we'll go with Brian next. All right, Eric, give us your number five. And again, this week we're talking about VHS gems. By the way, before we get into the list, don't you guys hate when something's on video or DVD or Blu-ray, but it's only as a collection? And like with three other movies, and you're like, yeah. "Fuck this shit!" What? Like, and then you don't know where to file it. Like, do I file it with the first movie, and then when you go to look for it, it's not there. It's always under a different, another movie. So
totally pisses.
Well,
me.
I actually just rearranged my whole collection today, tonight actually, and I put all the ones that were the more than one movie in the box at the very end. So that's where all the ones that are more than one film are.
That makes sense. But then I always forget. I'll always be looking for something, and I'll be like, oh, fuck, where the hell is that? And I'll think it's a single DVD, but it's not. It's part of a collection. Fucking assholes.
All right, so my number five, and I'm gonna guess now that probably my list is not going to overlap with anybody's. So, and as I said earlier, some of these might be out on DVDs in other regions, mainly because like three of mine are non U.S. based films. So okay. My number five is called Cold Fever. It's an Icelandic film from 1995. Has anybody seen this?
No.
Nope.
It's about a Japanese man who's a Japanese businessman, and he gets his like 10-day vacation and he wants to go play golf. But his parents died in Iceland on a trip, and he's basically guilted into going to Iceland to perform a little ritual to remember them by. And it's kind of a road trip across Iceland with this Japanese man. He actually runs into Fisher Stevens and Lily Taylor at one point. But it's a great road film. And there's something about Japan and Iceland. They're both remote kind of warrior cultures on volcanic islands. And they both have these cultural structures that are very family oriented, very much about honoring your ancestors and those kinds of things. So it's just a great little film.
Awesome. And what year is that from again? 85?
95.
Wow. Never I got to check that out.
Never even heard of it.
I feel like this whole list will be stuff I have to write down. Like, god damn it. Now, and then I got to go track down VHS. So damn you guys.
Or import DVDs.
I found this because we had a great local video store called Liberty Street Video. Liberty Street's one of the main streets in town here. And it was in their Scandinavian section. And so I checked it out and sounded cool. Rented it, watched it. And when they went out of business, I actually bought their copy. So
it's like your rad
stuff. I know. Damn. And then I had to crush my rad copy.
I can't believe you did that.
All right. Well, that we start off with Eric's number five. Brian, you're number five.
Okay. Of course, I got to start off lame with a three-way tie.
Oh, wow.
But I know Adam likes ties, so that's all good. Yeah. So these are kind of my schlockier picks, if you will. Mm-hmm. Not to say that there's no schlock in the rest of the list, but... I'm just going to list the titles, and then I'll go through each one. Mm-hmm. So the tie is between Heavenly Bodies, Never Too Young to Die, and Scream for Help. So Heavenly Bodies, I've done an entire podcast on The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema. I picked it, and we
very nice.
Yeah, that's a fun movie. So basically, it says a small dancer-sized studio fights for its existence against the unscrupulous owner of a rival club. The conflict boils down to a dance marathon to settle the score. So it's kind of like a Breakin-esque kind of save the rec center sort of story where these I think they're all secretaries, or they seem to work in a steno pool or something. They start their own club, and of course the rival athletic club wants to take them down, and it becomes
Wait, so it's dodgeball with dancing.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
I would say, yeah.
I have to watch this now.
It's great. It's actually
does it have Jean-Claude Van Damme?
No.
In leotard.
Sadly, no. I'm trying to think.
I've not seen this, but I actually own the LP soundtrack of it.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. It's a great soundtrack, by the way. Yeah, it's
you could be on some weird list now, Eric. They're like, this is the guy who, the only guy who owns LP.
This is a favorite. I was turned on to it by Phil Blankenship, who used to program midnights at the New Beverly Cinema here in LA. Now he programs heavy hitter midnights at the Cine Family, and he's just an amazing dude with really cool taste in movies. Actually, he ties into a couple of these on this number five slot here, but anyway, it's one of his favorite movies. He's had it as his birthday movie a couple times in 35mm. I never got to see it screened in theaters, but I would love to see it in the theater. It's amazing.
I've never heard of this movie, but so far my favorite part of this is that on the IMDb app, the three suggestions that come up for this movie are Heavenly Creatures, Porky's, and Fair Game.
Wow.
Not the Cindy Crawford Fair Game.
This is a movie that if it ever did get put on the DVD is going to come with like two other, you know, aerobic exploitation films.
Yeah, like Killer Workout and Death Spa or something. I mean, I don't know what they put it on there with, but or Murder Rock or I don't know. But anyway, so that's one. The next one is Never Too Young to Die, which I did get a chance to see in 35 at a heavy hitter midnight screening, I want to say earlier this year. It's got John Stamos.
Sold. That's all you had to say.
No, but wait, there's more. It's got Vanity. It's got Gene Simmons. And George Lazenby, James Bond himself.
Wow.
From the Majesty's Secret Service. Anyway, Stamos plays a gymnast named Lance Stargrove.
wow.
And he gets sucked into this sort of international intrigue because it's this greater sort of semi-terrorist plot that Gene Simmons is running. I think he wants to poison some water supply or something. But
so like all villains
this
do.
This is in the midst of Gene Simmons. I have to play a villain... Yeah. Streak, what, like this? Run away.
Yeah.
And what's the one with Rutger Hauer?
Oh, Wanted Dead or Alive. Yeah, that's a great addition to this group. Yeah, but this movie's just insane, dude. I mean, it's even difficult to describe because it's just so bizarre and ridiculous and fun. I highly recommend it. I really hope it comes out on DVD soon. Definitely worth a look. Okay, so the last one is Scream for Help, and that is directed by Michael Winner, who we might know from a couple of the Death Wish sequels. Death Wish 3 in particular might be my favorite. But he's a British director. He's done a lot of Charles Bronson movies. And in this one, a teenage girl discovers that her stepfather is trying to murder her and her mother. But when she tells people, no one will believe her. And it's another movie that's just kind of nuts. It's like one of those stories where you've got the evil stepfather, but he's so blatantly obvious about the fact that he wants to kill them that it's just insane. I mean, there's people getting run down by cars. I don't want to give too much away, but it's a lot of fun. It's strange. And it's one that I've talked to the guys on Warner Archive, and they own the rights to it's a Lorimar Telepictures production, and they have the Lorimar catalog. So I'm hoping that they may put it out at some point. But that one's from 1984.
Very cool.
Wow. Three of those are things that are on my list to see at some point.
They're on my list now.
Worth checking out.
Yeah.
Sorry for the extended number.
No, it's fine. I'm just excited about John Stamos.
As you should be.
That name.
Especially when he just greases his hair up and he's his cousin from Greece.
Oh, Stavros?
Stavros.
Is it bad that I remember that his name is Stavros?
That is bad. That's terrible.
All right, Adam, you're number five.
Okay, so my number five, I feel, following those three, I just... Okay, well, actually, no, I don't feel bad with this one. So, I feel bad because it you can get it from, I think, the Warner Archive or some movie on demand. It's from 1959, The World, the Flesh, and the Devil.
Mm.
Ooh.
Good pick.
With Harry Belafonte and Inger Stevens and Mel Ferrer. And they are the only three people in this movie.
Really?
It's
I've never seen this movie.
It's really, it was one of those late night TCMs, like, what is this? End of the world, and they're the last three people left, and they're all in New York. Like, Harry Belafonte's character is some sort of mine worker who gets trapped in the mine, and when he comes out, everyone's gone.
Wow.
And he finds Inger Stevens in New York, and everything's fine, and there's kind of sort of developing a romance, but then Mel Ferrer shows up, and he starts to fall in love with her, too, and that's when shit gets real. Uh-oh. And then there's hunting humans.
Wow.
Yeah.
This kind of sounds like The Quiet Earth a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely in that group with The Quiet Earth.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. There's a couple others like this, too. I like this subgenre.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
It's like the survival dystopian future / love triangle. The movie that I was thinking of, even though it's not, I mean, I don't think it gets as bad as all this, is, oh shit, what's that movie with Dermot Mulroney and
the trigger effect.
Yes, the trigger effect. Thank you.
Oh, never seen that one.
Remember the trigger effect?
I actually have the DVD of that, which it's really hard to find. I got it at a going out of business sale for a video store.
That was
but
a good
I remember seeing that in the theater, and it was great.
Yeah, that's the movie that this made me think of. But this is it's just on a much this is on a much bigger scale with much less people involved.
Wow, trigger effect is kind of cool. I dig it. Yeah. Don't you hate when like it's really late at night and you may sometimes maybe a little too inebriated, and your TV just playing, you wake up to the middle of like a crazy movie, and you're like, well, I got to finish this because I don't know what the fuck this is. I discover movies that way sometimes.
I wish I used to do that, but now I'm so regimented in what I'm. Yeah. I'm controlling everything I'm watching.
Well, yeah, I don't have I don't have cable. I don't have anything streaming that I haven't set to stream. So there is never a chance for me to accidentally discover something new.
Yeah, it's
like when I'm waking up to it, unless I spend an hour and a half on Netflix going through streaming. Like, oh, that looks good.
I tend to doze off sometimes at night with the TV on. So
no, that's a good way.
That was so far so good, guys. Damn you guys for making me put all these movies on my list. But all right, the list keeps getting longer. But for my number five, I some of these are like bad movies we love. I feel like this is a combination of both.
I pulled a couple off my list.
I saved them. I tried to keep the list itself short, so I put the bad movies we love. I left them for honorable mention.
Yeah,
but there's an overlap.
Well, for my number five, I picked a movie from 1992. And it's, I feel like guilty saying this, it's Sidekicks.
Guys.
Sidekicks isn't on DVD?
Yeah, that's crazy. I totally thought that. I'm thinking of the Three Ninja movies. Those are all.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that just makes it even worse. Three Ninjas is on, all the Three Ninjas are on DVD.
Oh, yeah.
Sidekicks isn't on DVD?
No. And this is directed by Aaron Norris, Chuck Norris's younger brother. And you know something's going to be good when Chuck Norris is playing himself. All right. That's the case in this movie.
I totally forgot about that. Holy shit.
I'll read you the synopsis. Barry is an asthmatic kid having trouble in life. He lives with his father, a computer programmer, in Texas. I guess that's a problem, living in Texas, apparently. Barry is struggling to get by in life, dealing with his rough school life, bullies, and, well, his health in general. Barry's only source of enjoyment is fantasizing that he is with Chuck Norris.
That's a fantasy. Oh my god! I know I've seen this, but I don't remember that at all, man.
He would daydream.
Oh yeah,
and he would daydream. He'd be watching Missing in Action, and he'd daydream, and he'd be in a scene with Chuck Norris and Missing in Action.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a little bit kind of it has like a little bit of a vibe, kind of like No Retreat, No Surrender. Remember how that movie he keeps seeing Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee's like weird ghost trains him. So, but yeah, this is kind of a guilty pleasure. It stars Chuck Norris, Beau Bridges, and Jonathan Brandis. So,
and Mako.
And who?
Mako.
Oh, yeah,
his name
yeah.
From
yeah.
The narrator of Conan the Barbarian.
Yes, that's right. He plays.
So I boycotted that film because I was a fan of the TV series of the same name that had Gil Gerard and Ernie Reyes Jr.
I was getting this Ernie Reyes Jr. vibe, and I'm like, why do I remember? I must be thinking of Three Ninjas or something. Why do I remember him?
I was just thinking of I just watched. It was playing on TV like literally last week. Surf Ninjas.
Oh,
that's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Quan Su.
you can quote Surf Ninjas, dude.
Something's wrong with you, dude. So that is my number five from 1992.
That's a really good pick. I had a huge crush on Danica McKellar.
I thought you were going to say Jonathan Brandis.
Not Jonathan Brandis. Danica McKellar. And Joe Piscopo is great.
What else is she in? Danica McKellar.
She's the neighbor on Wonder Years.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
She's Winnie Cooper.
I was like, why do I know that?
And
Joe Piscopo is a crazy roided out bad guy.
The coach for the
It's like Joe Piscopo doing his impersonation of the karate teacher from The Karate Kid.
Yes, yes.
But all roided out.
Yeah. Wow, dude. Yeah. I totally got it.
Cobra Kai.
I might as well not even have seen this because I don't remember it at all.
Go rent it on VHS and enjoy.
I will
it's
do that.
So silly.
I will do that.
All right, Eric, what's your number four?
All right, my number four is an Australian film called The Last Days of Shay Noon, directed by Gillian Armstrong. Starring Bruno Gantz, who you might know from Downfall.
American Friend, too, right? Wasn't he?
Carrie Fox and Miranda Otto is also in it. It's basically about a family in Australia where the husband has an affair and with the sister-in-law, I should say, and the family kind of falls apart and then comes back together. You know, back in the 90s, a lot of English-language foreign films got released in the States. including a lot of stuff from Australia, and this was one of the gems I ran across. And I think this one has a Australian DVD release, but not here in the States. So
I never heard of this movie, and I'm a big fan of Bruno, what's his name?
Bruno Gantz.
Gantz, yeah.
Yeah.
Loved him in Wings of Desire.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's a Wim Wenders guy.
Let me see, what year was this? This was 92.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
So.
That's fairly new. Very cool. And it's from Australia. I dig that. All right. Well.
And you know, one of the things that always gets me is, you know, you have somebody like Gillian Armstrong, and it's like, why can't you release that here in the States? I mean, it came out on VHS. Why not put it on DVD?
But, yeah. Well, and I am really glad that to hear that. I guess Warner Archive is now going to go Blu-ray, right? Is
yeah,
that...
yeah. They put out Death Trap and Gypsy were the first two, and I heard Hudsucker Proxy's coming.
Ooh,
awesome!
Ooh.
Must buy.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to sign up ready for that one.
And they're not BDRs. They're actual Blu-rays.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Which is, I mean, I guess that's something they're kind of struggling to get out there is. Look, these are real discs, not MODs.
So, Ricardo, Adam, do you guys not listen to their podcast at all?
No, I just discovered it. Well, just recently because of Brian.
Yeah, so, they were at the game night that you guys came to.
Okay,
really?
Two of the guys, two of the three.
Okay,
and yeah, those guys are awesome. I love that podcast. I mean, they'll go off on and talk about actors and movies I've never heard of.
Yeah.
But it's like a great sort of mental exercise for your cinephilic mind to just be like, who the fuck is Alan Jenkins? and then you go and look, and Alan Jenkins is really fucking cool. And anyway, so it's a really fun podcast. I love.
I didn't even know that they had a podcast. I just got to add it to the huge pile of podcasts I'm already listening to.
Yeah, they do interviews sometimes, but mostly the one I love is every Tuesday they'll run down the new releases because they're putting out new releases like every Tuesday, and so they'll kind of run down each movie that's come out and. Talk about them, and it's really cool.
It's a weekly or daily podcast?
Weekly. It's every Tuesday. Yeah. I think it's every Tuesday-ish.
I like that. I like I don't like podcasts that are like fucking every day.
No,
I'm like,
I can't
keep up,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's too much.
Once a week is plenty.
Yeah. Plus, you can listen through it throughout the week. I'm a fan of that. So, all right. It is to Brian's number four.
Okay, my number four is a film from 1974 with Jan Michael Vincent. It's called Buster and Billy. It's got Jan Michael, Pamela Sue Martin, who I really like. She was Nancy Drew, and she's in a couple Corman productions, like I'm trying to think, Lady in Red. Anyway, she's cute. And then it's got like Clifton James and Robert Englund in a very small. Basically, the gist of the story is it's set in rural the South somewhere. I can't remember which state, maybe Georgia. But basically, Jan Michael plays this kid, Buster, and he's sort of a popular kid around his high school. And he starts to go out with this girl played by Joan Goodfellow, who is like the town tramp, basically.
All right.
And and so like it just becomes this conflict because she's kind of been around and he starts to sort of fall for her. And then it becomes this conflict between he and the sort of popular clique in school and. Things go a little bit south, and it's a really good, touching sort of story. And Jan Michael in his prime in that 70s era, it's definitely one I'm hoping Sony MOD will put out.
What was the name of this one?
Buster and Billy.
Buster and Billy.
See, I feel like I can't catch up with all these damn films that you guys are naming.
Well, I mean, it's even harder when they're hard to get.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, this one's definitely recommended. I have a insert poster at our house.
Neat. And I always get jealous. As soon as I stepped into your house, I was already jealous, Brian. I was like, damn, all these damn arcade games. And just the foyer, by the way. And then I go up and I see the DVD collection. And I'm like, damn you.
Yeah.
No, I told you, the guys, that was just really cool for me to hear you guys who are big movie fans that I dig, like... It's just one of those things where you put your collection together, and then it's one of those things where you're like, nobody's ever going to fucking see this. So who the fuck cares I even have it? And then you guys look at it, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, some other film fans got to see it, and they can appreciate, I guess, some of the stuff that I have.
What's funny is that both Adam and I zeroed in on one Blu-ray, which I think that might be it might be a VHS gem, too.
I saw it on VHS for the first time.
Ninja 3.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I was thinking Demons for a second. That was a VHF.
Yeah. Well, I saw Demons on the shelf, like your little Dario Argento import collection, yeah. Which is amazing. but while we were sitting there watching your son play Super Mario Brothers 3, yeah. We looked up and looking right in the face, Ninja 3, The Domination. Yes.
We had just been talking about that, too.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it was a better Blu-ray transfer, but it's fucking Blu-ray. It's
but that's,
Ninja 3.
That's not, and that's an import, and yeah, that's not available on DVD here.
No, actually, that's one I think I almost mentioned it. Didn't somebody mention it for the bad?
We're always trying to mention it. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that movie can't get talked about enough. It's as far true. As I'm concerned. Yeah. You know, the more
is
we talk
part,
about...
I think it's part of that canon series of films that are nowhere to be found on DVD.
Which yeah. is sad, because yeah. they should all be... it's ridiculous.
I want to start a different podcast called The Canon Podcast, yes! where we just talk about canon movies.
Oh, dude.
That's wait, awesome. And they're defunct enough to where we could use the sound of their logo
oh, yeah.
and
oh,
get yes. away with it?
Well, the thing is, no one would sue us. We could use it for this podcast and no one would fucking sue us.
Well, so. Because we're talking about yeah. them in well, a good light.
Actually, it's funny. You know what? That's my dream thing. My dream thing is to sell a movie, sell a script, make enough money to buy the Canon, like to buy the Canon production.
The Canon?
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So that could be my production company.
You know the guy who did Quite Hollywood wants to do a Canon doc, or you might even be.
No, they are. Yeah. It's Drafthouse Films is, I think, either distributing or it's called Electric Boogaloo, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's in the works. That's coming. I think it is the same. I think you're right, Eric. I think it is the same guy that did Not Quite Hollywood. I'm super excited for that. I yeah. That's my most anticipated documentary by 1,000%.
You're like, even well, if it's not made
hopefully
yet.
Hopefully that will get some of these movies in people's minds, and some of the companies will be like, oh, that documentary came out. We can sell copies now.
Yeah.
What about Room 237?
Oh, I want to see that. No, yeah. no,
the,
you know
the
what?
Shining
I've,
doc.
I've heard yeah, pretty yeah, good things about that. That. Yeah.
Yeah,
but I'm more excited for the Canon doc. I guess.
Okay.
So. Yeah, I like The Shining, too. But I like Canon movies more.
Yeah,
they do have a wider range.
Exactly.
Yeah, where are we at? Adam?
So my number four.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number four. I think this is the only one that is officially not available on DVD.
Okay.
It is from 1977. And it is Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Oh, good stuff.
Ooh.
Okay, so yes, Looking for Mr. Goodbar, Diane Keaton.
Okay, there we are.
Diane Keaton, Richard Gere. And basically, it's just Diane Keaton is an infomaniac. That's the gist of this movie.
That's all you need to know. Yeah.
And I don't know why it's not on DVD. I mean, it's not like it's a bad movie. It's a weird movie.
It was on Instant, I want to say a year or two ago.
I think it might still be on Instant. Now, that's the other weird thing about movies. Like, there are some movies that aren't on DVD, but you can watch them on Instant.
Well, I see. I think that what that is there's some legal issue with putting the DVD out. Like, more money would have to be paid. Whereas streaming, I think they're finding a way to loophole it into broadcast.
Okay.
So, so all those movies, when they came out, they paid for broadcast rights for music or whatever the hell. Mm-hmm. But that's how I'm guessing, you know, something like California Split can show up there and be uncut, unlike the DVD, which, you know, has a sound cut out and stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Well, also like The Wonder Years. I don't think The Wonder Years will ever be released on DVD or Blu-ray.
Or China Beach.
And it sucks because the streaming version has, like, the shitty credit music.
Oh, yeah, it's got a different version of the song.
Yeah, that's
same thing with Married with Children.
Oh, really? It's they don't have the Sinatra?
Yeah, there's no Sinatra.
I heard he was...
Was it four seasons of the DVD? They went to an alternate song or something?
Yeah, I heard Frank Sinatra was...
Just ridiculous.
They weren't happy with that they had licensed that song to that. So.
Well, Married with Children doesn't really seem like a Frank Sinatra. I don't think the chairman of the board would really go along with
it. I just always thought that was the best ironic, you know, wonderful. I just thought it was so fitting. It sort of got me on. I was into Frank Sinatra, but seeing it on that show, I think got me into Frank Sinatra more.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah. Well,
that's a great pick though, Adam.
Yeah. Finally, you mentioned something I've watched.
That you have watched?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Annie Hall is a nymphomaniac.
Yeah. Well, I got to read you. Because just the IMDb description is disturbing in and of itself. A dedicated school teacher spends her nights cruising bars looking for abusive men with whom she can engage in progressively violent sexual encounters.
Ooh.
Which is not how the movie was pitched to me at all. It was, like, I remember reading about it somewhere.
It's kind of surprising you could... this is kind of an infamous film, so it's surprising it's not out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty dark and
very dark, and you see Diane Keaton does have nude scenes in this, but she was famous for not being she was the only cast member who wasn't nude in Hair. And like she didn't do nudity again until Something's Gotta Give.
Oh, dude, I forgot about that.
Yeah, we waited long enough, right?
Not worth the wait.
But yeah, so that is a good movie. Finally, I've seen.
It's a weird movie. Richard Gere's character is really bizarre, and it is. It's a really unsettling movie.
Yeah. All right. Well, my number four is from 1970. Well, it's a three-way tie, guys, and this is definitely a cheat. This is definitely a cheat. It's a real big cheat, and it's a slap in the face to the filmmaker.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm talking about the Star Wars trilogy.
What?
Yes.
Okay.
That is not a cheat. That makes perfect sense.
Right? Okay. All right. I definitely want the original VHS version of it. I don't want, you know, any CGI in my version of it. I'm glad I do have it on Laserdisc. So.
Well, and those DVDs had the last, you know, non-16x9, you know, transfers of the THX. I think the THX mastered. I have the Laserdisc too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm hoping with the Disney buyout that.
Yeah, that's the
just,
one.
Just a matter of time.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, all right. That's pretty cool. Maybe cool. Disney will actually listen to all of the fans who have been yelling at George Lucas for the last however many years, 15 years.
I mean, unless he went and took a big shit on all those elements somewhere.
Yeah.
Just had him
burned
on,
them all.
Dude, no. He had them on a roll. It's not a toilet paper. It's just like the
frame negative. By frame.
It's just something about celluloid, you know. It's much smoother.
Yes. Yeah. Really.
He's like, you know what? It's getting really cold in here. I'm going to burn something. All right, now I'll burn my celluloid. but yeah, so that's my number four. Oh. It's a three-way tie for all three Star Wars films.
Wait, but I mean, if you're going to do that, I think you could. It could be a four-way tie, and you do the Star Wars Christmas special also.
Oh. Well, you go throw THX 1138 in there as well.
Yeah.
But that's on. Oh yeah, you're right. Not the original cut. He's got all his crap that he did to the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't even seen the updated.
Blu-ray looks great, but he did the same kind of.
God damn it!
Yeah. I'm less finicky about THX because I'm not as attached to it. I think it's a good film.
Yeah.
But when I see the frame comparisons, it doesn't kill me. I mean, granted, it's not I'd like it to be the movie that he could make at that time and you know, represents what he was able to get done. But
yeah,
that's a good point to pull that in.
Yeah, and well, for me also, it's like. And I know Disney will definitely release the original ones because that's a way for them to make, like, a lot of money back.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we'll release these sweet little Blu-ray box set with – and every nerd is going to buy them. So we're going to make a lot of money. So we're going to have a cool retro packaging so that looks like a VHS cover. So, yeah, that is my number four. Eric, what is your number three?
All right. My number three is a movie from 1989 called The Running Kind. It stars really nobody that anybody knows, but James Cromwell's in it, and so is Juliette Lewis. It's about a kid from Ohio whose family has him on track to become a lawyer, and he goes out with his friends one night, and they go and they see this punk band, and he kind of falls for the drummer and then takes off, follows her to L.A., and it's just this nice little – hold on. I got a doggy yawning in the background there.
That's all right. That's all right. He wanted to chime in.
It's this great little film about a kid whose life is kind of lockstep set, and he decides to go out and do what he wants to do and see the world a little bit. And it's set in the late 80s rock scene in L.A., and there's a number of underground musicians that appear in the film. And I just really like it. I also wish the soundtrack would be available. But so that's my number three.
Excellent. Another movie to my list, my watch list.
Is it on Letterboxd? If it is, I'm gonna put it on my watch list too.
Yeah,
I'm actually looking right now.
So that is a cool number three. Another damn movie I have not seen. Yeah. All right, Brian, your number three.
Okay, my number three. As you guys may or may not know, I'm a huge fan of Rock and Roll High School.
Oh yeah,
and Alan Arkush in general. He used to come into the video store that I worked at. And it was always cool because the dude's he's like Joe Dante in that he just knows a ton of shit about movies and loves to talk about movies. And his movies are laced with all kinds of references to Frank Tashlin and fucking cool shit. So anyway, it's a really sad. I actually interviewed him too a while back and we got to talk about this movie. It's Get Crazy from 1983, which, I mean, some could see as sort of a semi-sister movie to Rock and Roll High School in some respects. Let's see. It says mega promoter Colin Beverly plans to sabotage the New Year's Eve 1983 concert of small-time operator Max Wolf Wolf's assistants find romance while trying to save drugs, violence, and rock and roll from Beverly's schemes. It's basically a tribute to Arkush's years at the Fillmore East, I think, theater where he used to work. And so it's just it's got Daniel Stern, who would be sort of the Arkush, I guess, you know, kind of character in the movie. And he's really good. And it's got, you know, just that great wacky sensibility, lots of out there characters, some rock stars that are clearly modeled after real rock stars. And it's just got a really great energy to it. And it's played in LA. I think, who am I thinking of? That directed Shaun of the Dead.
Edgar Wright
played it as part of his series most recently, I want to say a year or two ago, at New Beverly.
And, the Right Stuff?
Yeah, The Right Stuff. I think it was Right Stuff Part 2 or something like that. And because he had never seen it, and it played really well with the crowd. And I think Arkush was quoted as saying that he came out just to do an intro, and he ended up sort of hanging out to see it. And he was really touched by the fact that the crowd flipped for it. And I've heard that almost unanimously, people, when they see it as a crowd, it just plays like gangbusters. It's a really great movie. The interview that I did with him, he mentioned something about the elements not necessarily being altogether in great shape. Like, there was some sound issue that they might have lost the sound to it or something. So there may be some issue with it ever coming out on DVD officially. But it is on Amazon Instant Video right now. And Flicks, I think, also. So it can be seen. Just go to Amazon. If you have Amazon Prime, it's actually free. So
sweet.
That's one.
I know what I'm going to be doing later on this evening.
It's a lot of fun. I'm a big, big fan of it.
Yeah. And Eric, you back?
Yes, I am. Very cool. I really want to see this film.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard me, Eric, but it is on Amazon Instant Video. I think you can rent it, and or if you have Amazon Prime, it's a free watch that way. So it's definitely streaming, and it may be on some other streaming services too.
And it's got like Lou Reed, Egg Bailey Jr. John Densmore is in it. Yeah. Robert Picardo.
Yeah, Picardo. Yes. Yeah. No, it's got a great cast. It's really got a wonderful cast. Alan Garfield plays the guy that runs the theater, and he's wonderful. And yeah, it's just got a great. It's a really, like, if you're a fan of Rock and Roll High School, I totally recommend seeing it. It's really kind of an extension. In some sense, of that film.
Excellent. Well, we are at number three with Adam.
Okay, so my number three, it was also on my aviation list, and again, it is available, a movie on demand, but still pretty hard to find. I had to go out of my way to find it when I ended up seeing it. It's 1970s Brewster McCloud.
Nice.
Robert Altman, starring Bud Cort, and I think it's Shelley Duvall's first movie. And I just love it. It's about this boy who's trying to fly. actually, that kind of makes me think of another movie that I probably should have looked for, which I'll maybe do off mic. I love Brewster McCloud. It's really bizarre. I'm pretty sure I mentioned all the stuff I like about it in the previous episode, but Michael Murphy's character is great with these crazy piercing blue contact lenses that he's wearing the whole time.
I forgot about that.
Well, give us the IMDb synopsis. So.
Okay, so an introverted loner living in the bowels of the Astrodome plots to develop, with the aid of a mysterious guardian angel, a pair of wings that will help him fly. So he's actually building bird wings. Like, he's not trying to, like, just fly on his own. He's got this huge, elaborate set of wings that he builds. And he does, you see them, and they're just crazy. It's kind of ridiculous. It doesn't, at some points, it doesn't feel like a Robert Altman movie.
Yeah.
Because of the fantasy element. I mean, it's clearly an Altman movie in other points of view, but it's,
yeah, I mean, he's done, that's a surreal period for him with like Three Women and Images and things like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as far as that kind of surrealism fantasy, it's not really like anything else he's done. I don't think.
It's really, I think I can safely say it's the most cartoonish movie he's ever made.
I think that's
and
right.
I really like so? It. I think so.
I'm a big fan of O.C. and Stiggs, which is very cartoonish.
That's true. That's definitely the other movie that even comes close was was just thinking of that period specifically because I think O.C. and Stiggs is what, 85-ish, but yeah, that's a movie that people don't talk about and is just railed on pretty bad.
Oh yeah, but
as one of his worst. But I don't think it's that. I'm with you.
Yeah, I think it's one of my favorite. It's a sentimental favorite from high school. But I think it's like a lot of Altman stuff that people just didn't get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's starting to find a fan base more and more these days. I hear more and more people talk about it. I think I recall that, what's his name, that runs the Draft House Weird Wednesday series. Hmm. Lars Nilsson ran it, I think, I want to say a year or two ago.
Okay.
Well, Henry Rollins is also a big fan of that film.
That's awesome.
Talked about it.
That's so cool. I'd love to hear Henry Rollins' list of favorites along those lines.
Yes.
Work on that, Ricardo, getting him as a guest.
No. That'd be such an interesting...
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
We'd have to lower his levels. He's yelling, yelling at the mic.
You put him in another room. All
right. Put him in the living room. All right. Is it my number three?
Yes.
All right. I picked a movie I've talked about a couple times before. It is an MOD, but... yes, this is kind of a cheat, but not really. It's from 1950. It is Panic on the Streets. I think I mentioned like 2-3 times before. It is one of Elie Kazan's first early movies. It's basically, I love this movie because it's like a really early version of like Contagion. Basically.
Yeah, no, that's a cool movie. I remember you mentioning
it. It's got an awesome Richard Widmark in it as well.
Yes, yes. And it's got a really young Jack Palance as Blackie, the gangster. Basically,
I think it's shot in location in New Orleans as well.
Yeah, it is. And I think that gave it a lot of, especially in that day and age, you didn't have a lot of movies shooting on location. You had a lot of like sets, you know, built to make it look like in New York or this. But they were all filmed in Hollywood. This is one of the movies that actually went and filmed in New Orleans. And it looks really cool because it's in black and white, and it's cool to see New Orleans 1950s in black and white. So it's a doctor and a policeman in New Orleans have only 48 hours to locate a killer infected with a plague. So the gangster is on the run because he thinks they're after him to put him in jail, but they really just want to stop. They're kind of like chasing the outbreak monkey, basically. And the outbreak monkey is a gangster, so.
Yeah, I didn't know this one was a movie on demand.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. But
good to know.
But yeah, you could. I think at one point I think you could get it off of Netflix. I think it was even streaming.
It was a DVD that was part of the Fox Film Noir collection.
Oh, okay.
It might have gone out of print, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But definitely it's one.
That's one I want to buy.
I want to buy it too, and hopefully there's like a weird like Blu-ray thing, I'm hoping. It'll probably be added
to a collection.
It's one of the another one that I picked up at a going out of business sale at a video store, so.
Yeah.
Nice. I thought I heard that there was actually a pretty good print on YouTube at one point, and I don't know if they pulled that down, but
yeah, I actually saw
like
some
I actually
of
heard
it.
Of like really good print, yeah, like yeah. High quality,
yeah,
for that.
Yeah. So you might actually find it on YouTube. Check it out. All right, it is to you, Eric. You're number two.
My number two. Okay, we're gonna go back to Australia for a 1996 film called Love and Other Catastrophes, starring Frances O'Connor, Rhoda Mitchell, Alice Gardner. Matt Day, who people might know from Mariel's Wedding. And it's basically a day in the life of this group of college students who are trying to find a new roommate and figure out their love lives. And they're film nerds, so there's a lot of film talk. And it was the first film by the director, Emma Kate Corrigan. I think she only made one or two films. But this is another one that I picked up on VHS years and years ago, and they used to show it on the IFC channel or the Sundance channel. And it's just this nice, quirky little college movie that it's got some really nice performances and some really nice moments. And it's just one of my favorites. And this is another one that there is actually a non-US region DVD for, but it really does need to be out here in the States.
Very cool.
What year was that again, Eric? I'm sorry.
It was 96.
Yeah, see, I remember this one because I was working at a video store in college from 90. Well, actually, video stores from like 92 on through 99 and then later. But I remember this movie coming out and us having it at the video store. And I think I watched it, but it's been a long time.
This looks very familiar.
Yeah,
the cover looks familiar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's just a fun film that I really enjoy. And it's, you know, not every film has to be this great, you know, epic, sweet kind of profound statement. Sometimes these nice little films that, you know, there's a scene in the film Kicking and Screaming, the Baumbach one, where the one of the characters is having an interview at the video store and the guy's quizzing about what section different movies go in. And one of the sections he mentions is interesting failures. And this isn't a failure, but it kind of falls into that kind of interesting oddball films. And that's, you know, I have a lot of affection for those kinds of movies.
Yeah, I love, I do too. That's some of my, I mean, having worked in a video store, obviously it hits me just in the right spot. All the scenes with Dean Cameron and Carlos Jacot in Kicking and Screaming, just when he's interviewing, he's like, what are your influences? He's like, you know, Samuel Fuller, all the other ones, all the good ones.
Yes, exactly.
Just, I always thought that was so great. Yes. Somebody put Terms of Endearment in prison movies.
I have a friend who used to work in the video store here, and he used to get in trouble. They had a big gay lesbian film section. This was back in the late 80s, early 90s, when that wasn't so common. But he used to get in trouble for putting the J. Edgar Hoover biography in that section.
Nice.
But no, you can find Love and Other Catastrophes. I definitely recommend it. Unfortunately, the follow-up film, which was called Strange Planet, and it was an early... early film with I'm totally drawing a blank on the actress's name. Give me a second here.
Naomi Watts.
Early Naomi Watts nice. Film. It wasn't all that good, but Love and Other Catastrophes I really liked. There was something about the energy to it.
And it's got a young Frances O'Connor, who's not bad to look at.
And a young Rhoda Mitchell.
Ooh.
Who, yeah, it's definitely not bad to look at either.
Yeah. All right. Damn you guys. I feel, but this one I feel like I've seen because this cover looks oddly familiar.
Yeah, it really does.
So, yeah.
Although it is also kind of that generic 90s. Let's just close up on all of their faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. And crazy fonts. all right. Well, that we're on to Brian's number two. Is that right?
Yes. And speaking of my video store days, this is one I picked up in the video store I was at. We had an art film section. And for whatever reason, this movie was in there, and I know it's got a cult following now. I think one of you guys might have seen it. It's called Reuben and Ed. It's from 1991. Stars Crispin Glover and Howard Hessman.
I know this. I'm trying to remember if I've seen it.
It's a really oddball film, and it's great. It's just grown on me so much over the years. Here, let me read what the IMDb synopsis says. Reclusive Reuben Farr teams up with vocal but unsuccessful multi-level salesman Ed Tuttle on a quest to bury Reuben's dead cat in the perfect spot. Their trip takes them across Utah's desert, where they have run-ins with Ed's ex-wife, Rula, and an elusive Andy Warhol critic. That's
so that it's Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia via...
Yeah, it's an oddball mix. I mean, it's definitely a quirky cult-type movie. I mean, and Crispin Glover, this is the movie that really sort of made me, you know, I was a fan of Back to the Future, but this movie felt more like something that he's just a really odd dude. He's got like long hair in it. And
this was his acid days.
Yeah, probably. And he wears these like platform shoes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And he listens to Mahler, and he keeps his dead cat in the freezer. And they meet, it's really funny, Hessman plays this sort of loser guy that's in this real estate, basically a pyramid scheme where it's called, I can't remember, it's like the power of positive real estate or something like that. And so he's trying to get other people to go to the seminar, and he meets Reuben, whose mom owns a motel, and she said basically she's taken away his music. He can't listen to Mahler anymore until he makes a friend. So Ed is out, the Howard Hessman character Ed is out, you know, canvassing, trying to get people to come to the seminar, and Reuben comes by, and more or less they agree to trade favors. Like, okay, I'll come to your seminar, but you have to come meet my mom. And it kind of goes from there. And it's a lot of fun because they're just two oddball characters. And this director, Trent Harris, really strange dude. He made another movie called The Beaver Trilogy, which is very, very odd.
That film. Sounds like a really good porno trilogy.
It does, but it's like it's hard to even explain. Basically, there's one scene – I can't remember who this, the first part is like a documentary about this guy, I don't know if he's transgender, but he dresses up, as a woman and poses in front of the mirror. And I can't remember, it's a specific actor or actress. I can't remember. But so anyway, there's that section. And then the second section is, I think Sean Penn basically reenacting the documentary footage. And then they have one more section with another reenactment of it's just the weirdest movie. Anyway,
I've read about this somewhere.
Yeah, I have both of them on DVD. You can actually get these as, I think, VHS transfers from Trent Harris's website. Okay. And he also did one called Plan 10 from Outer Space with Karen Black. And Karen Black plays Howard Hesseman's ex-wife in Reuben and Ed, so he must have something for her. But but anyway, he's a really interesting filmmaker, a guy that when I saw that movie, I totally imprinted on it, and it's one that really deserves almost a Criterion release. It's that prestigious and quirky and interesting.
And have you guys seen the Crispin Glover interview with David Letterman? Have you guys seen that on YouTube?
I think so, yeah.
I know of it, but I have yet to watch it.
You have to watch it. I'll try to post it on Facebook. It is the most uncomfortable I've felt watching something. Because you're watching the video, you know he's high on acid, and you're like, oh no, please, no, don't get up. Don't get up. Don't kick David Letterman, please. He goes full Van Damme style roundhouse.
Oh my God. I think I watched part of it, but I think I had to turn it off. Yeah.
And then what's cool is to watch the follow-up interview where he goes back a year later and he apologizes and says he was on drugs. It's really, really funny. All right. Where are we at? Adam, number two?
Okay. So my number two, this is probably the first movie I thought of when I read your blog series. Of course, it is no longer only on VHS. Now you can get it through Warner Archive, I believe. But it's 1980s Simon.
Ah, yes. Ooh. Yes.
Very, Alan Arkin.
Very interesting, odd film.
Madeline Kahn. And it's written and I think directed by Marshall Brickman. Yeah. Who co-wrote Annie Hall in many of Woody Allen's movies. And I think it's hilarious. It's Alan Arkin tour de force as far as I'm concerned. Just him being crazy. He's a low-level scientist who this group of uber scientists convince him that he's an alien from outer space. But it's an experiment. They're just trying to see what effect it has on him. And one of his experiments, he comes up with all of his own ideas for experiments under the auspices that he's an alien. And he wants to recreate the human experience by being placed in an isolation chamber. And they leave him in there for a month. and when they let him out, it's one of the best scenes in film history as far as I'm concerned. He does the Dawn of Man as he emerges from this isolation
chamber. That is a really
good
scene. I've seen this one, yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I bought this the VHS copy of this when the video store in my neighborhood went out of business, and I've practically worn it out. So I probably should switch over and actually buy a DVD of it now.
Yeah, it looks nice. I mean, widescreen, remastered.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It just goes to so many weird places. And again, Alan Arkin and Madeline Kahn are hilarious together. And then Austin Pendleton, who I really like. You know Austin Pendleton in space.
Yes.
If you, He's in, I can't even think of.
He's in What's Up, Doc. He's in the Muppet movie. He's in Charles Durning's second.
Short Circuit, I think, is the movie.
Yes.
First one, the touchstone for me, where he's the head of the scientists.
Yeah. No, I love Austin.
He's on Homicide.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
Nice. I don't know if I could take him seriously. I probably could if I tried.
He was just in an episode of The West Wing that I was watching because I just started watching The West Wing.
Had you ever seen when it first aired? Did you see the series?
No, I'd never watched
The
West Wing.
Me neither.
Haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either. That's
shameful.
I know.
I have yet to watch it.
Yeah.
I've heard it's amazing.
It's addicting.
Yeah.
And this is now on DVD or
it is
movie on
movie
demand?
Movie on demand. Okay. So it will be a DVD-R that they make when you order it.
All right. Fresh off the press.
Fresh off the press. But very funny and worth it.
I got to check it out. All right. My number two is from 1986. I've talked about this before. I had a horrible, horrible incident with this movie. I bought it from my video guy. And when I was moving into my girlfriend's house, I stepped on it. And I couldn't fix it. It was one of those things where, I try to open it up and put it in another video case, and it just wouldn't take. I had broken.
The case rejected it.
Yeah. It rejected it. It spit it out. It got stuck in the VCR. But I'm talking about 1986's Rad.
Yes.
That stars the beautiful Lori Loughlin. Yeah. Well, I remember her as Uncle Jesse's wife, but,
I saw her first in Rad before Full House ever, so.
I think I did too, but I might have seen her here first. I might have fallen in love with her here first because she was riding the BMX bike.
Send me an angel?
I know. I can't listen to that song without thinking somebody's got to break out into the dance with their BMXs. Yeah. And you could clearly tell if you watch this movie before, you could clearly tell that the wide shots are clearly it's a guy and not a girl. Because like her shoulders are way too wide.
No, those it's the 80s shoulder bike pads. No.
So basically, the story is of a young man, Crew Jones, who has an intense desire to win a BMX race called Hell Track. And I love those weird twins that come out. That they're wearing like weird like futuristic jumpsuits.
Did I tell you the Tomax and Zaymot crossover that I always felt? Did you guys watch G.I. Joe?
Yeah.
Remember the twins? Yeah. That these guys always, because they're brunettes, they always reminded me of those two.
Oh, yeah.
From
G.I.
Joe. I don't know why, but.
They're really creepy. And they had the Billy Zabka-esque villain.
Yeah.
But I guess Billy Zabka wasn't.
He was making just one of the guys.
I know. Yeah. So they're like, he's busy. We can't get him. Who else is in this? Ray Walton is in this. Tali Shire plays Crew Jones' mom. Sorry, and dad. That'd be awkward.
Jones. Yeah, that's a different movie.
It's so fun. It's really cheesy, and if only for that dance scene that is the best musical scene laid to film. Yeah, Send Me an Angel.
I would say the I Melt With You montage in Valley Girl and that scene are two of my favorite 80s music moments ever.
Yeah.
And two of my favorite moments in cinema.
Well, I feel like when I was a kid, I fantasized about doing that. Like, I'm like, when I fall in love, I'm going to dance with the girl. I'm going to dance with the girl.
Bike dance.
I'm a bike dance at the prom.
Oh, yeah.
And as a kid, I imagined that's how prom was. Like, I'm like, when I'm in high school, that's how prom's going to be, right? Like, I got to bone up on my BMX skills.
See, when I got to prom, I was just waiting for the vampires to show up. So there's that.
So that is from 1986. Again, rad. Somebody put it on DVD. Come on. Or stream it or something.
I think that's another one where there might be issues with either the elements or somebody owns the movie and that doesn't want to give it up and they're assholes. And
somebody owns it and says, I don't want it to see the light of day.
Tali Shire.
Yes.
She's like, don't ever put this on DVD.
Yes. But all right. Eric, what is your number? Are we getting number one?
Number one.
So actually the recap. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
Or did you want to plug some podcasts first?
Well, we're also going to do honorable mentions after we do number ones.
Yeah. So recap your list.
So my recap is number five is Cold Fever. Number four was The Last Days of Shay Noon. Number three was The Running Kind. Number two was Love and Other Catastrophes. My number one is one of the two films that changed my life. It's from 1987, directed by Penelope Spheres. Starring Lee Vang, who was also in Get Crazy, Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Daniel Roebuck from River's Edge and U.S. Marshals, and John Cryer, and it's Dudes, the only punk rock western I know of. It's a film I discovered in high school, and I absolutely loved it. Soundtrack, and this is 87, mind you, the soundtrack had Jane's Addiction, had Megadeth, had Steve Vai, Wasp, it's a great punk and metal soundtrack. And it's about three punks from New York that decide that life in New York is too dangerous for them, so they're going to move to L.A. And they get most of the way there, and they're attacked by some rednecks. And one of them's killed, and the other two go out to look for revenge. And I have no idea why it's not on DVD. It's not like the music is... you know, there are bands that people know, but it's not like anybody's going to be holding out for big dollars for that.
Dave Navarro.
And it's, you know, Penelope Spheres and John Cryer. So, and it definitely has a cult following in the punk world for sure.
Yeah, I'm a big Dudes fan.
Never seen Dudes.
Seen this?
I haven't seen it. You've seen it?
Yeah.
Bren?
Yeah.
I've been meaning to see it for a while. Yeah. It's been on my radar. I just haven't been able to find a decent looking copy to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my number one.
Very cool.
Well played.
Yeah, I like that. Brian, okay. What is your recap in your number one?
All right, let me do my recap. So for my number five, I had my three-way tie of Heavenly Bodies, Never Too Young to Die, and Scream for Help. For my number four, I had Buster and Billy. For my number three, I had Get Crazy. For my number two, I had Ruben and Ed. And for my number one, I got one more tie. And it's a movie called Test Pilot from 1938 and another movie called Abandoned Ship from 1957. So real briefly, Test Pilot is a movie with Just a second here. It's a movie with Clark Gable, Myrna Loy, and Spencer Tracy, and also Lionel Barrymore. The synopsis says Jim is a test pilot. Jim, of course, would be Clark Gable. His wife, Anne, and best friend, Gunner, try their best to keep him sober, but the life of a test pilot is anything but safe. So it's just an interesting, old Hollywood movie, with Gable as like a daredevil and Myrna Loy as this girl that I think if I remember correctly, he sort of like crash lands his plane. He's on some kind of special flight and he lands in this small town and runs into Myrna Loy, and they sort of fall for each other. And Spencer Tracy is sort of this guy who's always trying to keep him out of trouble, but he's a daredevil, so he's always going to get in trouble. He's always going to get in trouble.
Didn't they just remake this with Denzel Washington?
very much like Flight. But yeah, so it's directed by Victor Fleming, a Spielberg favorite director. And so it's a good movie, and it's one that's I think Warner Archive, it's just a matter of time. Another one that was on my VHS gems list when I made mine was Red Dust, and that also has Clark Gable. And that one's come out since then, so I'm hoping that this is just a matter of time for them, because I know they control it. I'm sure they do. The second one is a more recent discovery, this movie Abandoned Ship. I can't remember. I can't remember how I came across this. I think it was Twitter, actually. There's a guy named Cliff Alperti, and he is iEphemera. It's IEPHE ephemera on Twitter. And he's like an old movie connoisseur, and he's had many great recommendations. I think it was him that called this movie Lifeboat with Balls. Like, Lifeboat is a good movie, and I like Lifeboat, yeah. But this movie is like just, it's harsh. I mean, like, opens on like the scattered, leavings of like a boat sinking. Like, so there's luggage floating around, there's a body floats by, and then you see Tyrone Power, who's like the lead of the movie, sort of struggling to get onto like a piece of some kind of floating piece of something, and finds his way to a life raft, and it becomes that sort of, group of people in a tense situation, and some tough decisions are made, and it's hardcore. It's way more hardcore than I expected. And there's some shit that goes down. You're just kind of like, whoa, you don't necessarily expect it from a movie from 1957. So, highly recommended, definitely worth tracking down. Another one that's a Columbia movie. So I hope Sony will put that out, but definitely one that, will be on the new series I'm starting, which is, Film Discoveries, my favorite, older films that I saw for the first time this year, and this is one of those. It's definitely worth seeking out.
I like that list.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we your might number do one that. Pick is my number one movie that I want to watch right now.
Yeah. Also, I like, I want to do that as a podcast as well. Like new discoveries where you,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, where you discover that, the stuff that, you just watched on DVD and that was out a while ago. So I love that. Good pick, and I feel like Adam as well. We should be watching this right now.
I hope you like it. I mean, I'm not trying to build it up too much, but it was just grittier and better than I thought. If you like Lifeboat, it's better than Lifeboat. Okay. All right.
Great lists, both by Eric and Brian. Adam, don't let us down.
Okay, I'll try. So my number... Oh, wait, no, recap. Yeah. My number 5 is The World, the Flesh, and the Devil. My number 4 was Looking for Mr. Goodbar. My number 3 was Brewster McCloud. My number 2 was Simon. And my number 1 from 1987, I mean, I don't think it's a cheat because it was on DVD, but it's out of print now. It's Barfly.
Nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
Another Crispin Glover, right?
No.
Crispin Glover's not in this?
No.
Mickey Rourke.
Oh,
Faye Dunaway.
What am I thinking of Crispin Glover?
Alice Krieg, pre The Collective.
This one, I just got...
This is the Bukowski film, right?
Yeah, it's Bukowski.
Yeah, there's an import. There's like a German Blu-ray that I got of this that came out this year.
I saw they have a new German import.
Yeah, I mean, it's way too hard to see for as good a movie as it is. It's ridiculous.
Wasn't this on streaming like a little while ago?
Not that
really?
I'm aware of. Factotum is on streaming still. That's another Bukowski movie.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that compare to Barfly, by the way? I've never seen it.
They're very different takes on Bukowski.
That's what I figured.
And it's weird because... So in Barfly, it's Mickey Rourke playing the Henry Chinaski character. And then in Factotum, it's Matt Dillon playing Henry Chinaski. And yeah. I just like the little sort of kismet of the fact that they both played that and they played brothers in Rumblefish. They both played Bukowski characters. They're very different takes. Mickey Rourke's take on Bukowski is way more over the top. Like, he's much more animated and more boisterous. He's like a louder character. And I feel like Matt Dillon really channels Bukowski a lot more.
Interesting.
And they're very tonally different. Like, the Barbet Schroeder versus Ben Hammer, however you say his name, they have very different styles. Like, the Ben Hammer is much more sort of atmospheric and slow and lots of stillness, and Ricardo would love it.
Stillness. Oh, yeah.
You know what I was thinking of? For some reason, my mind, when you said Barfly, my mind went to River's Edge.
That's really bizarre. I don't know
why. It's really funny you should say that, because we were talking about Dudes earlier, and that's got Daniel Roebuck in it, who's the lead in River's Edge. I just rewatched
and
River's
Chris
Edge.
Glover was in the other one.
Wow, that's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking. I don't know why my mind went to that. That's so weird.
I was
weird.
Actually also thinking about River's Edge earlier, so clearly there's something in the air. Were you thinking about River's Edge, Eric?
Actually, I was, because I actually got the DVD at Big Lots recently.
Nice.
Are you serious?
So we were all on the same page.
I just watched it on MGM HD, I want to say about a month or two ago, and it still holds up.
You got it at Big Lots?
Yeah, like an Odd Lots, Big Lots kind of deal.
Oh, wow.
I had them for like $3 and I bought a copy.
It's funny, I went to the dollar store and I found Scenes from a Mall.
Oh,
on Blu-ray. On Blu-ray, by the way.
For a dollar?
For a dollar.
Wow.
What the fuck is this Blu-ray for a dollar shit? I didn't know about that. I mean, outside of that shit, the cheap shit like Straight Talk. You see that stuff?
Hey, I almost bought Straight Talk.
For a dollar, I'd buy.
For a buck on Blu-ray.
What do they have? I'm sorry?
The Marrying Man with Kim Basinger and Alec Baldwin.
Wow, I haven't seen that in
Wait, isn't that Prelude to a Kiss?
I get that confusion.
You're right. I'm thinking.
Marrying Man.
It was one of those.
I like Prelude to a Kiss.
Okay, moving on.
I've never seen it.
Oh, wait, no. But, oh, wait, no. Prelude to a Kiss is not Kim Basinger. It's
Meg Ryan.
It's Meg Ryan.
Yeah.
What's the Marrying? Who's Marrying Man is Kim Basinger, but who's the one in that?
Is it Alec Baldwin?
I don't know.
Well,
it might be.
So
I think
everybody
they did it together. And they were married at the time.
Yeah.
If I recall, Prelude to a Kiss is the same screenwriter as Joe versus the Volcano.
Yeah, it's Kim Basinger, Alec Baldwin, and Robert Loggia in Marrying Man.
Yes. Love Robert Loggia.
And so before we forget, give us the synopsis to Barfly.
Okay, so Barfly, I mean, there's not really much of a synopsis. It's just, well.
They're drinking involved?
Yeah, they drink a lot. He's a struggling writer. Okay, but per IMDb, Henry Chernaski never cared for the American dream. The thought of needing to become something and to fit into the system disgusts him. He believes that life is free and yours to live like you see fit. And if that in some cases involves copious amounts of whiskey, then so be it. Henry spends his days drinking and listening to the radio, and he spends his nights drinking and fighting against Eddie, who he thinks personifies shallowness. And it keeps going on. Like, that's just the end of the little blurb right here. I guess I could read more. But the movie opens, what's called Barfly. So 99% of the movie, they're in this bar. And the bartender is Frank Stallone. And the movie opens with Mickey Rourke and Frank Stallone fighting behind a bar. And it's all downhill / uphill from there, depending on how you look at it.
I love Frank Stallone. I just heard him on a podcast, and he is... he's got the best stories, like the best stories you've heard. He's a really great storyteller.
Does he live in LA, by the way?
He does. He does.
Dude, you can totally get him.
That's
on the
a dude I want to really get, because he has the funny stories and he won't shut up. And he just tells some great. And he talks shit about his brother, and he does an amazing Stallone.
Where'd you hear him? Just
on the Adam Carolla podcast.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, he was amazingly, amazingly fun to listen to. Great stories about like Rocky and like just his brother, and it's just.
I want to hear his Cobra stories.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
I want to hear his stories about that TV show where he played like, it was a TV show about an actor, and the actor had a brother, and he was friends with Frank Stallone and Patrick Swayze's brother and some other.
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck?
I don't
Tom
remember
Hanks'
what,
brother on that one.
Was it Tom Hanks' brother?
Oh, yeah. And they all look weirdly, like, close enough to be like, this guy kind of looks like Patrick
Swayze.
Like
if Swayze? I was drunk.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, it's Stallone. Oh, wait, no, it is Stallone, but it's not that Stallone.
Yeah. All right.
So yeah, I love this movie. I'm a diehard Bukowski fan, so I went out of my way to find it. And it's hard to find. You can probably find some bootleg of it somewhere if you don't want to buy a German Blu-ray import.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Faye Dunaway's great. And then Alice Krieg, I mean, if you're a Star Trek geek, because she plays the Collective in First Contact. But she's great. She's like the agent who's trying to discover him. And it's a really weird movie. And this Bukowski, it's not an adaptation. It's like he takes some of the stories from his writing and sort of rewrites them in a different way. And he's in it briefly. He's one of the barflies in a scene. And it's interesting to read the book Hollywood, which is about the making of Barfly.
Yeah. You've been trying to get me to watch all these movies about Bukowski. So
you should.
I have to get on this.
Start with this one, definitely.
Yeah. It's and can you say watch Factotum last? Didn't you say that?
I haven't seen Factotum. You think it's worth seeing, obviously.
I love Factotum. That was one of my favorite movies
I
ever.
I saw it.
Yeah. It's great. And it's the truest to Bukowski. Although I completely forgot that Ben Gazzara was in Tales of Ordinary Madness as a Bukowski type character.
Oh, wow.
And I still haven't seen that one. So I have no frame of reference, and I feel like a lesser fan for not seeing that one yet.
You bastard.
But I have watched all of the Bukowski tapes, which Barbara Schroeder filmed while trying to get funding to make Barfly, where he would just go over to Bukowski's house and film conversations with him.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, but you should definitely check out Factotum, check out Barfly, check out Tales of Ordinary Madness, which I need to check out too, the Bukowski tapes, and Born Into This.
Awesome.
If you like Bukowski, if you think he's shit, then you probably should avoid all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll do my recap and then my number one. Number five was Sidekicks with the great Chuck Norris playing himself. Four was the Star Wars trilogy. Three, Panic in the Streets from 1950. Two, Rad. And my number one, this movie has two titles. My video says one title, but IMDb page says another. So I'll go with the IMDb title first, and then I'll name the other name. It's from 1984, and it's called Courage. But my VHS tape says Raw Courage.
Dude, I have that. That's on my honorable mentions. That's it. That's right? Actually another Phil Blankenship favorite. That's a great fucking movie.
Right?
I've not heard of this one.
It's really cool. It stars Ronnie Cox, and
I think he and his wife wrote it too.
Yeah, yeah. What's her name? Mary Cox. Them two wrote it, and it is really cool. Basically, you have three marathon runners that are taken captive in the desert by right-wing militia.
It's a little bit Deliverance-ish.
Oh, okay. Now this is ringing a bell. I've heard about this somewhere.
Yeah, it's like Deliverance in the desert, basically. And and what I never understood is why the hell is Are the only three people running a marathon?
I forget. Are they just training, or are they actually running?
No, they're doing a marathon. Okay. Like, they're going through the desert, and then in this other town, they're like meeting them, and like the whole town's waiting for them. But I'm like, why is there just three runners? I don't understand.
I forgot. I've only seen it once.
Yeah,
and I liked it. But.
And one of the guys in the militia is Corey from Boy Meets World's dad, William Russ. He plays
he's been in a lot of interesting things.
Yeah, he has. He's a really good character actor. I like him a lot.
Most definitely.
Yeah. And Emmett Walsh is in this. He plays the leader of the militia. And it's really cool. Like, and I don't understand the militia either. Like, why are they just randomly like training in the desert?
It's some kind of maneuvers, quote unquote. It's sort of like Southern Comfort too. And
yeah.
You know, there's that. It's like this weird mix of
Deliverance,
Southern Comfort.
But it's really cool. Ronnie Cox is amazing in it. And, but yeah, I always wondered, cause I tried to find this movie cause I lost my VHS copy, and well, I didn't lose it. My dad kept it. It was my dad's copy and he wouldn't part with it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. and so his copy says Raw Courage, and then, but IMDb and like everything else is credited as just Courage. So, but it's a really, really fun movie. And, yeah, like we both said, it's just Deliverance in the desert. So
yeah, that's good stuff. Cool. Man.
It makes a canoe trip difficult, though.
It does. It does. Yeah, yeah. And like, there's a really funny scene where this dude has a cramp, and he's like, they're trying to hide, and he wants to like yell, and he's like sweating, and he's got to like cover his mouth, and it's pretty intense. I definitely dig this movie.
Well, it does sound extra terrifying because I hate running.
So, yeah, I saw this one relative. You know what? No, I guess not that close together. I was going to say I thought it was close together with Death Valley, the with what's his name from Christmas Story, which just is coming out on Blu-ray now next week, or would be one of my VHS gem picks. But the two kind of remind me because there's like evil people in the desert in both movies.
Yeah, yeah.
For whatever reason, they have that in common.
Yeah. So that is my number one. Let's get into some honorable mentions then. Eric, want to start us off with honorable mentions?
Yeah, I just have I don't know, like six or seven. But starting off with Radioactive Dreams,
nice.
Neon City, and World Gone Wild, which are all post-apocalyptic films. Radioactive Dreams is about a pair of kids that get put in a fallout shelter when the nuclear war happens, and they come. All they have to entertain themselves. They're all detective novels, so they think they're like 1940s, 50s style detectives. And they come out into the world looking for their fathers, and they run into 70s disco midgets and 80s new wave mutants. And it's just a fun, silly Albert Pyun film with John Stockwell and Michael Dudikoff.
I forgot that was a Pyun film. Yeah, that's a really cool one. I like that.
I don't think enough movies have 70s disco midgets.
Yeah, no. Neon City is basically Stagecoach after the bomb. It's got Michael Ironside and Vanity and Lyle Elzado.
Oh, wow.
Sorry?
I said, oh, wow. I've heard of this, but I've never seen it.
It's I remember it being very cheesy but enjoyable. And then World Gone Wild is Magnificent Seven after the bomb with Bruce Dern, Michael Paré, and Catherine Mary Stewart. So following that with – I'm a big Catherine Mary Stewart fan. She's in Dudes. And she's also in a film called Scenes from the Goldmine, which I'm a big fan of.
That's on Instant right now.
Perfect film, but it's another 80s L.A. rock and roll fable kind of film.
Yeah, I think that's got Cameron Dye from Valley Girl in it, if I recall.
Yep, and Jules Shepherd, Steve Rail's back, leaving.
Yeah.
It's a guilty pleasure of mine.
Yeah, that's on Netflix Instant Watch.
Directed by Mark Rocco, who was Alex Rocco's son, who I guess died fairly young. So
cool.
That's Scenes from the Goldmine. And then I have my two high school films, Plain Clothes from 1988, which was directed by Martha Coolidge, and stars Arliss Howard as a young-looking cop who goes back into high school to basically prove his brother's innocence. And it's, you know, the cast has got Diane Lane and Seymour Cassell and George Wendt. And it's just a fun kind of 80s high school romp. Not really a romp. I mean, there's an actual mystery there, but it's definitely one that's never been on DVD, although I do believe it's on some of the streaming sites.
Yeah, I was going to say it's
one of those things we saw on cable back in the day that I really liked.
It's on Netflix
instantly. And then Canon Film from 1986, Dangerously Close with John Stockwell and Kerry Lowell. That's anybody ever seen this?
I don't think so.
It's about a kid that gets into an elite school and runs afoul of a group of students called themselves the Sentinels, who are kind of like hall monitors gone crazy. And there's been some deaths, maybe. I wouldn't say it's a great film, but it's a film that I enjoy. And, you know, it shows that era of high school and popularity. And it's definitely worth seeking out. So
that sounds from cool. There,
get into three more. Bill Forsyth's Comfort and Joy. You know this one?
Yeah, it's a great pick. I have an import DVD of that.
Yeah, this is about a Glasgow radio DJ who gets caught in the crossfire between two warring groups of ice cream sales.
It's really good. It's a really fucking good movie.
It's great. So there's that. Ed's Next Move.
Oh, I remember this one. What's the story with this one?
It's about a kid from Iowa who moves to New York City and meets a woman. In it, and they fall in love. It's a romantic comedy, but it's an indie romantic comedy starring Matt Ross and Kelly Thorne. Matt Ross, you would know from Big Love, and he was in The Aviator, and he was on the first season of American Horror Story. And Kelly Thorne, who's one of those actresses I think is overlooked generally, she was on Homicide, and she was in The Wire, and now she's on a show. She plays a doctor that's totally, I'm forgetting the name of it, but it's just this nice little romantic comedy that does not treat the audience like morons. And I wrote about this on my blog about 2 years ago, and I got an email from the director who said, saying that he finally got the rights back to it and they're going to try and get it up on streaming. So,
oh, wow.
And then the last one is a film called The Disappearance of Kevin Johnson. Anybody heard of this one?
I have not. Any guess?
I don't think so.
Does not sound familiar.
About a fictitious British film producer who comes to Hollywood, gets a film greenlit for a couple million dollars and disappears. And obviously he's a con man that's made off with the money, but nobody – then this film crew goes and they try to figure out what happened to him. And all these Hollywood people can't believe he got a film greenlit. Why would he take off? And there's this disconnect between them and the concept that somebody would see the money as more important than making a film. came out in the 90s. I think it was the last film that Dudley Moore was in.
Oh, wow. I never heard of this.
I saw it once or
Technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry, we lost you for a bit. You said this was yeah. Can you hear us?
You're breaking a little bit.
All right. Can you hear us now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so you were saying about Dudley Moore?
Yeah, it was Dudley Moore's, I guess, last live action appearance. But it's got James Coburn and Pierce Brosnan. And it was just an interesting little film that seems to have vanished. So.
No, that sounds awesome. Really cool to me.
Yeah. You've just added a bunch of movies to my list.
Yeah, I was just scouring Letterboxd for a couple of these.
Yeah.
Dangerously close being at the top of my list. I really want to see that. Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Yeah. All right. Is there more on your list, Eric?
No, that would be it.
Awesome. Oh, well, awesome list. You brought it today. Brian?
You know, it's funny. When we were talking about The Marrying Man. Robert Loggia brought to mind one that I had left off my list, so I'll start with that. Mm-hmm. It's a movie called Cold Blooded. I think it's from 1995, directed by M. Wallace Wolodarski, who I know has now gotten a relationship with. I know he's done some stuff with The Simpsons, but he also has a relationship with Wes Anderson. I think he's in a couple of the movies, including Darjeeling Unlimited. He's the bald guy on the train and I think he might be the voice of the mole or whatever that's the super in Fantastic Mr. Fox, the guy whose eyes go all weird.
Oh.
I think that's Wolodarski. Anyway, he directed this movie. It's basically a dark comedy about hitman played by
Jason Priestley?
Jason Priestley, yeah, exactly.
I was wondering if that was it.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's got
Michael J. Fox is in this, right?
Yep. Yep, Michael J. Fox and I'm trying to remember the lead gal. I'll have to look it up. But he basically is a guy who's a bookie. He works for like a bookmaker, and they have to get rid of their hitman, and so they bring him in as a hitman. And Peter Riegert is training him to be a hitman, and the boss is played by Robert Loggia, and there's a prostitute that Priestley sees every once in a while, played by Janine Garofalo. But he plays it really well. He's got this very sort of stiff body movement that he does, and he speaks in this really slow sort of cadence, and he just really...
It's like Forrest Gumpish.
Sort of. I mean, but it's a really fun, dark movie. It's really good, and Michael J. Fox is in it. And
that scene's really good.
Yeah, yeah. So, Josh Charles is in it, and he plays I'll have to look up the girl, but anyway, it's definitely...
Kimberly Williams.
Kimberly, thank you very much, yes. This was on streaming. I don't think it is anymore, sadly. But definitely worth looking for. Let's see here. I've got a few more here. Ode to Billy Joe, which is a movie with Robbie Benson and one of my favorite actresses, Glynis O'Connor. This one is actually on Amazon Instant if you want to try and find it. It's directed by Jethro Max Baird Jr., who also directed a cool movie called Macon County Line, which
is a good film.
Yeah, very good film, and it is on DVD. But Ode to Billy Joe is sort of a sister film to that in some respects, in that it's Southern in a certain way. And anyway, that's definitely worth checking out. I'm a big Robbie Benson fan. so there's that. And then Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, speaking of
very
Altman.
Nice. Mr. Altman, yeah.
Yeah, this one is really hard to find. I think it was an Embassy home video release a long time ago, but it's got Beulah Bondi, Cher, Karen Black.
Barbara Hershey's in this one, isn't she?
No, but it's got from Misery, Kathy Bates.
Yeah.
One more that I'm forgetting. But anyway, it's like basically it's based on a stage play, and it all takes place in this Five and Dime store. And there's little flashbacks of this James Dean fan club. It's these girls. They reunite for their meeting, and there's this whole mystery about one of them supposedly had a child with James Dean, and you sort of flash back and figure out the story throughout. But it's really cool, and it's well performed, and it's one that I really hope. I had it on Laserdisc, and I ran off a copy on a DVD, but it's one that really needs to be on DVD.
Everything Altman needs to really be on DVD. Why don't we have a big box set or two? I mean,
couldn't agree more. He's one of my favorite directors out there. He's just got such a great filmography. Lunatics, A Love Story. This is from Josh Becker, who did Intruder, I think, and he also did Thou Shalt Not Kill Except, which I think is most famous for the Jart killing scene where somebody's, I think, killed with jarts, the lawn darts.
Oh.
I don't know if you guys remember that scene. Anyway, this has got Sam Raimi's brother, Ted, and the wonderful... why am I forgetting?
Deborah Foreman.
Yes, thank you. Deborah Foreman, who I have talked to on Twitter a little bit, and she's really cool. Yeah, so they're just, it's sort of an oddball love story. Like, he's a total, it's really dark because Ted Raimi's character is more or less hallucinating most of the time. He thinks, you know, he doesn't want to leave his apartment. He thinks bugs are crawling all over him, and she's just sort of an oddball too, and they sort of find each other. It's an oddball romance. That's one I actually only saw for the first time this year. I ordered that one. You can get on, like Trent Harris, you can get this from Josh Becker's website. But that's a really neat one. The Big Fix. This one was on streaming. This is a Richard Dreyfuss detective movie from 1978, and he's fantastic in it. It's just sort of a campus. It's sort of a, like, he's a post 60s radical type that now is a detective that has kids, and he gets caught up in this sort of conspiracy thing, and it's a really neat mystery story. Really well done.
It's got a great cast too.
Yeah, it's a really good cast, and I'm telling you, this is one of my favorite Dreyfuss performances. He just nails it. I wish, and it was a really good print on Netflix Instant too, widescreen, so I wish they'd bring it back. But I'm hoping that means that maybe it'll come out on MOD at some point soon. The next one is Hey Good Lookin'. It's a Ralph Bakshi movie, one of the few that has not shown up on DVD. Sort of akin to maybe like Heavy Traffic a little bit. Coming of age-ish New York story. It's definitely got that Bakshi feel. This is another one that's on Amazon Instant if folks are looking. Actually, you know what? It's on Vudu now that I remember. I bought it on Vudu for like 10 bucks.
Vudu is so cool. I like Vudu a lot.
I'm totally fucking addicted to Vudu. The 1080p streams that you can rent or buy from Vudu.
I know. When I recommend a Vudu to you, I forgot to send you an invite.
I should have, dude. I'm sorry. I fucked that up. You could have got some money off.
Could have got $3
off. Seriously, because I bought a bunch of stuff. Vudu, I can't recommend it enough. Because there's a ton of stuff that's on there in 1080 that you can't buy. Like, I got, you know, Big Wednesday and After Hours. And anyway. Hey Good Looking is definitely worth checking out. There's one called Rolling Vengeance. This is one of the few movies that... it's like a monster truck revenge movie.
It's AMC staple.
Yes, and it was playing on MGM HD for a little while. I still have it on my DVR from like 2 years ago. It's got Ned Beatty in it, so you got a little Deliverance tie-in. He plays like the patriarch of this family of assholes that, you know, fuck with one of the main characters, and, you know, shit goes bad, and a monster truck needs to get called in. It's good. It's a good movie. Raw Courage, the aforementioned or previously mentioned, definitely good stuff. And The Kid with the 200 IQ, Gary Coleman movie, probably my favorite Gary Coleman movie. Also featuring a young,
very nice. I remember watching that.
Also features a young Crispin Glover, by the way. But yeah, him and Robert Guillaume. He's like a young kid that gets into college and he struggles to find his way. And it's definitely a Gary Coleman classic, as far as I'm concerned.
Very cool.
And that's it for mine. Sorry, so lengthy.
No. We're good. Adam?
I think my honorable mentions are pretty short but sweet. Okay, so this is a really random one, but I really loved it when I was a kid. I think I was 11 when it came out. The Air Up There with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. That's not a DVD? So
no.
Long.
Isn't that a Disney movie?
It is.
It seems like they put a ton of stuff. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, where he plays the basketball coach who's sent to recruit an African prince to come play for the NBA.
Learn something.
He learns something about himself.
Yeah.
And then this, the problem with my honorable mentions is this is where I put all the bad movies I love that aren't on. So I don't know that they're necessarily VHS gems, but I enjoy them.
But they
are.
I mean, you know, that counts.
Okay. So, 87.
They're gems to you.
They are, in a way. Although I never thought, if you'd asked me like 10 or 12 years ago if I would have called this movie a gem, I probably wouldn't have said yes. 1987. I can't help it, but as I get older, I love Ishtar.
Oh, I love Ishtar so much. Too. I actually have, I shelled out a little bit for the Blu-ray of this because there was like a fucked up printing of it where a couple of them got out and then Sony pulled it. And I ended up saving up, and Amoeba in Hollywood had one copy.
Wow.
And so I have... And I know by the time it, you know, it'll come out on Blu-ray probably next year or some shit. So it'll be a waste.
I mean, as much as it gets shit, it's weird to me that it isn't on DVD or anything.
It's ridiculous. I
there's not enough of a cult following for it to make money.
Think they need to make their money back still? I mean,
yeah. No, I mean, it can't hurt. And Dick Tracy's coming out next week, by the way.
On Blu-ray?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Can't wait.
Okay, but speaking of movies that I seriously can't understand why they're not on DVD at all, 1924, Greed. Why isn't Greed on DVD?
That's a good question.
Michael J. Fox?
Eric von Stroheim, not Greedy. Not Greedy. I was like, Greed.
I think 24.
Okay. My buddy actually have on loan one of my coworkers from the old video stores a Laserdisc copy of that right now. But yeah, it's an MGM thing.
Yeah. Well, it's like
there's the same thing with a couple other silence. Like the Crowd was in the same silence.
And the Big Parade, I think.
Big Parade, yep. Yep. Yeah, it's weird. I don't know what happened to that group. It's very odd.
It's and you can find the copies like online, but
you know what's even weirder is if it's MGM. Well, they must not control it anymore. But I was going to say Criterion's got the hookup or had the hookup with MGM for a while. They just put out Heaven's Gate and stuff like that. Yeah. So I mean, that's such a clear.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Obvious go for them.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Some of that stuff should be hitting public domain soon enough.
Yeah,
as well,
it's on. They have a copy on archive.org, but it's the title cards are in Italian. Then I found another copy on the internet somewhere, and it has the English title cards, but it also has Russian subtitles beneath the English, so it gets a little confusing. But yeah, it's not on DVD.
Because all of a sudden you're like reading Russian, and you're like, oh, I get my languages confused.
Well, yeah, you know, they just blur together after a while. Yeah. The Cyrillic, I can't deal with it. And then, okay, so these are the two lowest of the low. 1986, and actually it's a made-for-TV movie, The Park Is Mine.
I like this
one. Tommy Lee Jones. Okay. I'm glad someone else
That's on Vudu in 1080p.
It's on Amazon Prime also.
Yep.
Do you know The Park Is Mine, Ricardo?
No.
That's a total Ricardo. You totally dig this movie, dude.
Is it really slow?
I know the name, but I haven't seen it.
It's Tommy Lee Jones.
It doesn't have the stillness, but it's like stillness.
It's okay. It's Die Hard in a park.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Except, but he's not like fighting off terrorists. He is the terrorist. He has taken over Central Park. Because he wants them to acknowledge the soldiers who served in Vietnam.
Oh wow!
And it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It's not like good, but it's cool, and it's a movie that like if you saw it when you were a kid, it definitely would.
So it's kind of also got like a Rock type of feel to it.
Kinda, yeah.
A theme,
yeah. It's like The Rock from the point of view of Ed Harris entirely, except he's alone. It's just one dude.
Okay, I could get behind that.
On Vudu
and
right now,
Yaphet Kotto is in it. He's like the police chief who's sent to reason with him. It's ridiculous. It's on Vudu and Amazon. You should check it out. I think there's a really surprisingly good version of it on YouTube, which now that I've said it out loud, it'll probably get taken down eventually.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Thanks for nothing, dude.
Hey, you could go watch it right now.
Yeah, okay. You can watch it tonight,
before this airs.
Okay, and then this one. So this is the worst. Right off the, I can tell you right now, 1991.
This is the best of the worst.
Yes.
Okay.
Or the worst or the of the best.
Okay.
The Taking of Beverly Hills.
Oh, dude. I like that one.
Sorry, you broke up there. The Taking of what?
The Taking of Beverly Hills.
Okay.
Do you remember this movie with what's his name?
Ken Wall.
Ken Wall. Yeah, and Matt.
And what's
Frewer's
his name from Max?
It.
Yeah, Max.
Matt Frewer.
Yeah.
He is. It's such a weird movie, and
Robert Davi, man.
Robert Davi's in it. He plays
very
diehard the owner of the football team. It's such a weird movie. It's also on YouTube right now. There are two separate people have posted this movie in its entirety on YouTube.
Wow. Yeah, it's got a following, man. This was one that played as a New Beverly Midnight, I want to say, a couple years back.
It's a really weird movie. It's kind of like the opposite, because looking at it now from this point of view, it's like the opposite of the whole 1% versus the 99%. It's like, because it's from the point of view of the 1%, was like, oh no, we can't let these people who don't make enough money take over Beverly Hills.
Yeah, save Beverly Hills.
Save Beverly Hills for the rich people who live there.
Yeah,
squash.
I mean, tell people
proletariat.
The plot. The plot is interesting.
Okay, so a bunch of it's such a convoluted plot.
It totally is.
Like, the simple way is a bunch of ex-cops set up this conspiracy where they fake a toxic spill in the middle of Beverly Hills so they can rob a bunch of banks and all the stores like on Rodeo Drive. My internet stopped loading for a sec and all I can look at is Rolling Vengeance right now. Where did it go? But yeah, and then it's just a weird convoluted plot because what's his name? Whose name I already forgot. The main character.
Ken Wall.
His main character, he's not a cop or like a rogue private detective. He's a retiring football player who decides to save Beverly Hills from the former police officers who are trying to get their money due. Okay. Yeah. That's all it says. A group of embittered ex-cops use a chemical spill to raid the banks and homes of Beverly Hills.
You had me at the one percenters.
The one percenters. Yeah, they gotta protect their own from the cops who protect and serve.
Yeah. Is that the end of your list?
That's the end of the honorable mentions. That's it.
That's the best of the worst. All right. I have from 19. A lot of these from the '80s. So two of them are only on VHS. Three of these are just out, barely out on DVD. So I have from 1986, I have Losing It with Tom Cruise, Jackie Earl Haley, and John Stockwell. Yeah. And basically it's set in 1965. Four rowdy teenagers, dudes, travel to Tijuana, Mexico for a night of partying when they're joined by a heartbroken housewife who's in town seeking a quick divorce. It's just fun. It's really early, young Tom Cruise. And
directed by Curtis Hanson, I believe.
Yes, one of his early films. And it's just a fun movie. It's hard to find, just period.
I think there might have been a DVD release, very limited at some point. I think. I could be wrong. I could be wrong about that.
I just remember this movie being on TV all the time.
Yeah. But I love it. You can definitely not go to Tijuana anymore unless you get shot. My other one is from 1971, and it is the original Willard. I think this might recently be on DVD, but it might be out of print because you can't actually buy it anymore.
I like that and Ben both.
Yes, yeah. Which Ben was a sequel, right, to this? And it stars Bruce Davison as Willard. So
he's awesome. I love Bruce Davison.
There's a really good documentary called That Guy on Showtime right now. It's about character actors,
and
Bruce Davison is one of the guys in the documentary. It's really interesting. You guys check it out.
I totally love it.
It's called That Guy. And then my three DVD. Well, they're on DVD. So, but they were recently not on DVD. So, I'm gonna just pour them in there because they were on my list previously. The Wraith with Charlie Sheen and Nick Cassavetes.
Always pushing The Wraith.
I'm trying to get the IMDb rating up, man. And
it still needs a Blu-ray.
I know. And from 1986, Solar Babies with Jamie Gertz and Jason Patrick, Lucas Haas,
Peter DeLuise, baby.
Yeah, and it also has Michael Ironside as like the villain. And then from 1987, Whitewater Summer, with the Bacon, Kevin Bacon. That is.
That's not on DVD.
It just came out on DVD. Yeah, so
that's a good one.
These are my three that just are. They just recently been released on DVD, but no Blu-ray. So, kind of small steps, baby steps, guys. Maybe I'll get my Rat on DVD soon. So.
Oh God!
But anyway, so that is my list. That is all our list. And what else? What else? A little plugs. Brian, where could people find you on Twitter and your website?
The website again is rupertpupkinspeaks.blogspot.com. Watch for the favorite film discovery series. I just kicked off the first list today with a list from Todd Liebenau. He runs Forgotten Films, which is the blog I really like, and his is the first list on the site. But they're going to be coming out slowly through this month, January. They ran through February. I mean, it's going to be a lot of them, and it's my favorite series that I run, and it's always a great source for, stuff to look forward to watch. It actually sets me up for the whole year just to go through these lists.
Hmm.
But on Twitter, I'm Bob Freelander, BobFreelander.
Awesome. And Eric, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter at Iron0, IrenZero. And then you can hear me on Outside the Cinema and Love That Album.
Awesome. Very cool. And you just recorded an episode of that, right? Just recently?
Yeah, Saturday morning.
I was too late to turn in my list for that. I was messaging him as you guys were recording. So.
Okay.
But I'm looking forward to that list. And then you could find me. You could find the podcast on Twitter at The Film Podcast. You could find us on Facebook, same thing, facebook.com/ The Film Podcast. You could find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERAS.
You can find me at @AnAdamScott, AN_AdamScott.
And you could, for like in-depth reviews and stuff like that, go head on over to shootingthescript.com. That's Adam's website. And what else is coming up on your reviews? Anything new coming up?
There's a bunch of stuff I'm supposed to review. It's been really busy at my real job. That's like my side work. So
yeah.
I've got to get back. It's been a while since I wrote a review. I think the last review I wrote was the collection for the MoviePass blog, which is blog.moviepass.com.
There you go. So follow all these guys and myself if you can. Go ahead and go on iTunes and rate us. Give us a little rating. That helps us. And tell a friend. If you like this podcast, tell a friend, hey, check out these dudes. and chick, because Jenny is usually on. She's not on today. But that is it. Until what else do we need to plug? Anything new?
I don't think so.
That's about it, right?
I think that's it. All right. We're good to go.
We're good to go. Until next time, everybody. Thanks for listening. And I forgot about this. We had our like year anniversary, and we didn't do anything for that.
Congratulations.
We'll do something soon. Thanks.
Related congrats.
And thanks for everybody for listening and you know, contributing stuff on Facebook, the website, and Twitter. Thanks for listening and all the support. And until next time, have a good week.